Numbers.
Good morning, I'm Isaiah Jacob. Former Ohio State quarterback Lincoln Keenhols has made his decision to transfer to Louisville to join the Cardinals. After working behind Julian Sayin this season, Keenhols has 2 years of eligibility remaining. In the NFL yesterday, Carolina's bid to win its first division title since 2015 and first playoff berth since 2017 was put on hold. The Panthers fell to Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers 16-14, giving Tampa Bay the lead in the division. Now the Panthers need the Atlanta Falcons to defeat the Saints today at 1 to force a three-way tie that in turn will give the playoff spot to Carolina. Later on, with the NFC West title and the conference's number one seed on the line, the Seattle Seahawks got a 13-3 win against their division rival San Francisco 49ers. The Seahawks won their seventh straight, earning a first-round bye and home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs. And then today at 1, the Battle of Ohio, the Browns travel to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals. Myles Garrett is just one sack shy of the single-season record.
Live and local, it's time for Fan Sports Sunday. If the weekend is a big desert for sports talk, think of this show as an oasis.
Yes, here we go.
Come drink from our pool of hot takes as you quench your thirst with.
I thought I was going somewhere, but I'm not.
So let's just start the show.
Contrary to popular belief, this is Fan Sports Sunday.
I mean, we could talk about the Browns if we wanted to.
We could. And we will at some point because we got a whole quarterback situation next year to figure out because they kind of boxed themselves out of drafting a quarterback, geniusly so. And so we'll get into all of that later. Cole Bartemus, Austin Ward, the prophet Isaiah Jacob, who...
he's a double prophet.
Yeah, he may have broken the code of nicknames, though, because he fed us the nickname.
Okay. You asked me for the nickname.
I asked him, like, we got to come up with like a nickname or something for you. Yeah, he goes, yeah, the prophet.
No, yeah, I'm like, swear that's you called me that first that, before I said it.
I did not know. You fed me that one. That's a really good nickname unless you give it to yourself.
See, I'd prefer other ones, though, over the prophet.
What else is in there? See, what's in the chamber?
The majority of my friends call me Zeke, which is like the main name that I've gone by.
Oh, yeah, I like that one.
But the prophet is just, it's something my friends called me in like middle school.
Do you have Zeke in your Snapchat handle, by the way? I swear.
Yes, I think I do.
Because when you add a new contact, and so, actually, this is the interesting thing about this job, is like, you like, kind of have a bunch of famous people in your contacts. And then
what a humble brag.
Depending on who it is. And then
I'm not one of those.
And then when you add a new person into your contact list, Snapchat picks up on it because you have your phone number connected to it. And it says, hey, your new contact, so, and I'm not adding these people, just to be clear, before Fish freaks out. But I'm not adding these people. But I do see when you add a new contact into your phone, Snapchat picks up on it and then it suggests a new friend for you. Hey, the new person you just added into your contacts.
It's the prophet Zeke.
Exactly. And
well,
so
double up.
I swear when Isaiah put in his, when I got Isaiah's phone number, Snapchat's telling me, hey, you know, Zeke, whatever, what Zeke
it
22.
Is. You're right. Was Zeke, yep. I'm not going to put it all out there, but it is Zeke. Yeah.
Find him.
Well, you just put out your Snapchat. There you go.
That's not the whole thing, but you can look for it.
Zeke J and then probably some obscure characters and numbers after that, but that's the start.
Zeke's that follower count up.
Exactly. There we go. Like I said, I'm not adding as all of these strangers, although Isaiah's not a stranger, but all the, you know, celebs and whatnot.
Celebs. Yeah, that's your whole contact list. Nothing but celebrities.
There we go. I do sometimes get the question of like, hey, do you have any like famous people in your contact? I'm like, well, I call Adam Schefter every week to get him on Rothman and Ice. So
it's pretty big.
Technically, yes.
Got to go to
one
of those.
On my contact list, on my Snapchat, I've got all of them on there.
Yeah, exactly.
Not my contacts.
Oh, we're taking selfies and sending each other those captionless photos just so we can see each other like middle schoolers do. There we go. All right. So anything happened this week, by the way? You know, we had...
No, I can't think of anything.
Yeah. We had a holiday. We had... a football game. Did you hear? I don't know. Ohio State and Miami played, and it didn't go well, depending on who you ask. So Miami wins this one 24-14. First things first. I mean, again, this is just this is early offense from the prophet Zeke over here. But Isaiah Jacob is like the one person at this station who somehow didn't have to work in any sort of capacity.
Oh, wow.
For everybody else, I'm producing three shows back to back to back that day. I go from Common Man to Timmy because Ted runs the games, so he came in later. So I'm doing that. I'm doing Ice's pregame show. Then I'm going to Rothman's pregame show. And Isaiah's just like, hey, Happy New Year. Hey, he just gets the some preferential treatment over here. I don't know how that worked, but let me tell you about what happened with me. So I'm working here. We're doing shows 12 to 6, whatever. And so afterwards, I go straight to a hangout. So there's a New Year's Eve party that me and my friends are attending. And so with the Buckeye-Miami game, obviously to us, it's kind of like a combo thing. It's Buckeyes in Miami. And so we go to one person's apartment for the pregame.
Okay.
And then we're at halftime, we're going to switch apartments and go to like the big one.
Got
to
change the vibe.
Exactly. There's a vibe switch up at halftime. And by the way, Ohio State could have used the vibe switch up, and actually it may have contributed to that opening drive. But we go to the first apartment, the football game's on, we're hanging out, we're doing our thing. And so we go over to the second place, and it's like a quad. So it's like it's four people living in one place. It's actually a house, but it's four people. So we know one person who lives in this house. So we are basically 25%. We're already guests at this person's house, but we're also in the minority in the sense that we're like, we only know one person, so when four people live there and they're all inviting people over, now we're like minorities even as far as guests go.
That's too many strangers.
And let me tell you, it was not a football crowd.
Uh-oh.
We show up, the game's not on the TV. Like, that cannot happen, okay? And so the person who we know went to bat for us and was like, hey, I was letting them know, like, hey, when my friends come over, people are going to watch the game, just letting you know. And we show up, and it's like music videos on the TV, and like, dude, it was like a Great Gatsby type of crowd too. Like, we show up, we didn't even know that there was a theme. I didn't know.
You were supposed to show up with a fedora on?
Yeah, I was supposed to show up. It's like all the ladies are in dresses, all the guys are in suits, and like everyone's like dressed to the nines. And then our crowd rolls up asking about the football game. I'm in my fan hoodie. I'm wearing jeans. I'm in my fan hoodie. One of my buddies in a flannel. We're like, were we like not invited? Like, did we just show up and just crash this party? So we show up. We're doing the game where we're like propping up one of our phones in the corner and like trying to. We got some like bad Wi-Fi because we don't have the Wi-Fi password. So the game's cutting in and out. Like, we're kind of like bending down trying to get an angle. So everybody else dressed to the nines, not watching the game, but having a great New Year's Eve party. And we come in thinking it's an Ohio State Miami combo party, and we're watching in the corner on our phones, dressed completely out of whack. So that is how my night started. And so it was just you talk about a vibe switch up. That's a huge vibe switch up at the party.
Yeah, I don't think that actually did work in anyone's favor.
No.
And that's, you got to take that up with the friend.
No, she went to bat for us.
Okay.
She went to bat for us because it was kind of the other thing. She was outnumbered in her own house. And so she was
she didn't send you the dress code.
That's true. So I'm showing up in I'm in a fan hoodie and jeans. Like I came straight from work, and I'm showing up, and I'm that was a total party foul on my part. Although I wasn't alone in that, so my buddies were there to help bring me down with me. But so that's how that night went.
Mm.
Now the game eventually did get put on the TV, so we did win that battle, thankfully so, because, and you know, I have the excuse of like, hey, like, this is for work. Like, can I watch? Like, so, you
didn't
know,
you see my hoodie? I'm working right now.
Don't you see? Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm taking notes. Like, I'm writing stuff down. Like, I got to be ready
with a beer in his hand. I'm taking notes right now.
No, I'm not a beer guy, which I know is like one of the most unmanly things about me is that I don't know, dude. Just can't
You do whatever you want to do.
Hey, man, well, there was some, we were mixing
stuff.
There's
no shame.
Exactly. But, I mean, we didn't get out of control. All right. Let me rephrase.
Some people did.
I didn't get out of control. There were definitely some people who were. I was not one of them because I got work the next morning. So, you know, it's a unique week. Everybody else, again, they're in New Year's Eve mode. And I'm just like, look, can we please get this game on the TV? And when we finally won that battle, when we finally won the battle of just getting the game on the TV, we were warned, yeah, we're still playing the music, so the volume's got to be off. And I'm like, fine by me.
Whatever.
Which, by the way, with those broadcasters, they got the lowest rent of broadcasters that ESPN had. And I know that they're like Dave Pasch and Dusty Dvorak, right? They do the games all the time. I was not impressed. This is like one of the biggest games of the year. And I guess if you have four games, you got to have a fourth broadcast team. But that was kind of weak in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have to hear it. You know, I was there.
Yeah, how was your experience there?
Mine was, you know, it was covering a game. It was all pretty standard.
It was covering a game. This is a huge game.
I know. It was just, it felt a little bit off. I mean, you're talking about the vibe. It, Ohio State came out flat. It was puzzling to try and piece together what they were hoping to accomplish on offense, and you're looking at the offensive line get taken apart. But you know, even just in the buildup, it felt strange. And you know, my wife Cole, she loves New Year's Eve. She's talking, you know, she wants to watch the game. She's a huge Ohio State fan.
Did the little one get to stay up till midnight?
She stayed up. Yep, she made it all the way through that. So a lot of disappointment for them. But like, you know, the game itself, it felt like, you know, any other. And then it was just bewildering to try and, while it was happening and afterwards, with, you know, where the press conferences were going to be, who was going to show up, what they were going to say. And so that part is almost like a blur. You know, we can talk about breaking down everything that happened in the loss, but it was afterwards for me, when you're talking about the, you know, the disappointment or feeling like you're somewhere that you're not supposed to be. We're sitting, Berm and I are on the shuttle bus, and it's about to turn midnight, and this bus is not going anywhere. We're sitting out there for like 30 minutes in the parking lot of AT&T Stadium. The game's been over 2 hours, and like, all we want to do is get out of there, or at least have a drink, you know, when it turns to midnight, and to celebrate. That was the part where I was like, you know what? I am blessed. This is one of the best jobs in the world. Cover Ohio State. I talk about the Buckeyes 365 days a year. I'm at every game.
I hear a butt coming.
But the part that nobody thinks about is sitting on a idling bus as it's turning midnight on New Year's Eve with no drink in your hand, and you just covered a deflating loss that's the end of the season.
You sound like Aaron Andrews going through the whole, you know, no one really considers that all the holidays that we have to give up. That was a big popular thing on Twitter a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of reporters kind of doing like a whole collective, like, what was me thing. And hey,
I don't want that sympathy.
I know. And look, it's also true. Like, you're not necessarily coming off as whiny. You're definitely not coming off as whiny, but like, there was definitely like a lot of momentum with that a couple weeks ago, where it's like Aaron Andrews said something on a podcast or something like that, probably her podcast, come to think of it. And that's fine. She can tell a story, and it's true. But then, like, when every reporter after that came on and was like, oh yeah, man, this is like, it's like, what are you doing? Like, if everybody's so upset about this, it's like, no one really considers the sacrifices. It's like, yeah, but at the same time, like,
we also get the rewards.
Exactly. And you're also not alone. Like, you have all your coworkers there who are doing the exact same thing. And so it's like, how am I going to be like, oh no, I got to come into work on New Year's Day, man. I want to go out and drink with my friends. It's like, well, when I show up here, I got a bunch of friends who are doing the exact same thing. So we're all in this together. All right. More of this, more thoughts on the game, more thoughts on the state of the program. And the transfer portal is getting busy with Buckeyes and former Buckeyes, by the way. That's up next. Fan Sports Sunday on The Fan.
We're the girthiest radio station in the history of radio. Uncomfortably girthy. This promo is uncomfortable. The Fan, Ohio's girth destination.
Everybody, you know what hope is? Hope is action. Carving a path forward, even when it's hard.
And kids who still know how to dream. They're the best pathfinders of all.
So at Child Fund, hope means helping millions of children living in poverty worldwide to grow up healthy, educated, skilled, and so all those good things can come true for them. Safe.
And that means safe at home, safe at school, and safe online.
Hope means walking this path together, all of us. Because when we work together, we can do so much more.
That's right. Hope includes you.
Child Fund, because we need each other.
To learn how Child Fund works with children in 23 countries to help them achieve their full potential, visit childfund.org. That's childfund.org.
Hey there, Jane Lynch here. You want to hear something funny? Too bad. You want to hear something uplifting that will inspire you? Good. Because today, I want to talk to you about Direct Relief, a humanitarian organization that does seriously good work when it counts. Fires, hurricanes, earthquakes. When disaster strikes, Direct Relief immediately shows up with medicines, medical supplies, and everything doctors and nurses need to save lives. Let's ship her out! Every day across the United States and around the world, they're making an enormous difference. If someone needs help, Direct Relief helps. No politics, no red tape. Hey, what you doing over there?
Oh, I'm packing insulin for kids with diabetes.
See, every box here is literally a lifeline for someone in critical need. So check them out at directrelief.org. You might just bring a smile to someone's face.
I thought mixing bleach with my floor cleaner would take the stain out.
When my youngest ate the dog's medicine, that was a new one.
I was trying to protect my garden, but I accidentally sprayed myself with pesticide.
So I called 1-800-222-1222, the poison helpline.
A poison expert helped me figure out what to do next.
I was connected to someone who spoke Spanish.
They answered my questions.
It was free.
It was confidential.
It was real help in real time.
Keep the poison experts in your pocket. 1-800-222-1222.
Hey, Aaron. What
teacher or coach do you ever feel overwhelmed supporting kids' mental health?
Teachers need tons of help.
I had never experienced players being so down that they can't even participate.
It's so important that we are constantly educating ourselves.
It's the same as the CPR class to me. We're trying to save a life here.
The Kids Mental Health Foundation has free tools and information developed by experts. Scan the QR code or check out kidsmentalhealthfoundation.org to get started.
In the old days when people lived to be 40, you only had one option for listening to your favorite show. But now, ooh, baby, radio, podcast, the Fan app, and YouTube, ooh, just to name a few, live or on demand. You have no excuses. The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a mix of clouds and sunshine here for your Sunday, with temperatures warming up into the lower 30s here for this afternoon. Winds will be fairly light at about 5 miles per hour. And then as we head into the work week, we are tracking a nice warming trend as we get back up into the mid-40s here on Monday with a partly cloudy sky. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
During this 10-second promo, Rothman will lose money gambling on something.
People like you come here and blow the family nest egg that built this town.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan. Coffee? These guys don't need coffee. They're jacked on life. And Buckeye football. You're listening to Fan Sports Sunday.
Cole Bartzimus, Austin Ward, Isaiah Jacob is the combination today. So that game that took place on New Year's Eve, huh?
There was one, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Honest to goodness. And let's just go through what our expectations were throughout. So I did not hear a single person at this station predict a Miami victory. I think I was the closest, because as cliche as it became leading up to the game, and this is just what happens when you have like a week and a half layoff in between games. It's like they're going to be talking points that just get beat to death.
Yeah.
Which is my big problem with the NFL draft, is that we have like 3 months of that. And so we're kind of approaching that season very quickly.
Here we go. Yeah,
Senior Bowls are coming sooner than later. We're going to have combines. So, with the week and a half layoff, you start to hear like the same thing over and over again, and then it starts to get cliche, and then it starts to get like tacky in a way. But the O-line, D-line thing for Miami is real.
Like, it was, yeah.
I know, and don't I know it, being a Notre Dame fan, the whole Notre Dame-Miami dynamic, but like I saw him week one, and I was like, dang, Notre Dame is lucky to be in this game, because they are better on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And that is a huge strength in football. I'm a huge believer that just because, you know, quarterbacks and receivers are easier to talk about because we have stats and we have football reference pages and stuff like that that we can look at, and we can kind of like assist ourselves in conversation. The game is won and lost up front. And by the way, as soon as I heard that Huckleberry, what's his name? The dude, the committee chair for the playoff.
This one, the one that changed?
Yeah, the one that, if you guys remember, we had the Baylor dude.
Then you went to, did they get a Hunter Yurecek?
Yurecek, that's right. So when Hunter Yurecek said that he assigned everybody on the committee the homework of rewatching the Notre Dame-Miami game, I'm like, oh no, we're done.
Yeah, that's out.
I know how that game looked. Okay, Miami, really good on the O-line, really good on the D-line. And so because of that, I expected a very low score, and because of Ohio State's defense, credit them as well.
Yep.
I expected a very low scoring game, so my score prediction was like 17-13. Not that everybody was like predicting a shootout, but I was expecting very tight, very low scoring. And even for those expectations, I was still blown away by, and I'm not trying to like shock jock this thing, but I was blown away by how soft Ohio State looked compared to them.
Well, they were out-physicaled. They were, and that doesn't happen very often to Ohio State. I think that they were out-coached and out-schemed in this game, at least when we're talking about Miami's defense against Ohio State's offense. And as you said, like, it became a little bit of a cliche, and I I certainly felt like throughout the month of December, coming out of the Indiana game, which plays into this, that the Hoosiers had created a ton of problems for Ohio State's offensive line. And then you spend the next 3 weeks or after Miami beats Texas A&M and you look at Reuben Bain and you look at Akeem Mesidor and Justin Scott and those guys, you go, well, that's clearly the path to victory for Miami. And so we talked about that. We harped on it. Everyone at the station that was still predicting Ohio State victory was because I think that you anticipated if you gave Ryan Day and this coaching staff that length of time to prepare, there are ways around that. You don't have to just line up man on man across the front and win every single snap just with one-on-one blocking. You can create, you could go tempo, which I didn't think Ohio State did enough of on Wednesday night. You can use some more of the RPOs and change the look. You just get the football out quickly, some of the screen game. There are lots of ways to attack a defensive front like that, which we see, ironically, like every single week with teams trying to do that to Ohio State and slow down Kenyatta Jackson or Caden Curry or Chase Young 5 years ago, whatever. Like, oh, Ohio State's sack numbers aren't great. Well, yeah, because opponents are trying to make sure that they don't play into Ohio State's strengths. And some of what happened, I think, on Wednesday night, it's like the absolute worst case scenario. We could all see a path to victory for Miami. It wasn't that nobody thought they were talented or that they didn't deserve to be there. And all of us had a recognition of what the Hurricanes would be able to do that could create problems for Ohio State. I think there was just a working assumption that they would find a way to attack it, and they didn't.
So the big reason for me that despite the fact that I was so impressed with what Miami was capable of on the line of scrimmage is that I still think in order for Miami to win that game, Carson Beck would have had to make some really key plays in clutch spots, and I didn't think that he was capable of that, and he did.
He did it with his legs, which was the problem.
I know, and so he wasn't even that stellar. His box score definitely wasn't that impressive, but watching that game, there is something so just like aesthetically pleasing about if you're like actually like watching a game and focusing on it, not just like background noise. There is something to be said, and this is usually with running backs, but I guess it pertains to Carson Beck in this spot, about people who always fall forward when they're tackled. People who always just have that momentum, get that extra 2 or 3 yards. That can make all the difference in the world. There was one example of Carson Beck where he's going nose to nose with a linebacker and rolls over him and gets those extra yards for the first down and third and long. Like, he made some really big plays, and my friend, and I'm texting with my buddies all the time about sports, so our group chat's blowing up, and we kind of have some split decisions. Some people are coming down pretty hard on Julian Sayin and not really impressed that he didn't step up much. I'm saying, like, he was under so much duress, what do you want him to do? And it was all game long. It's not like there was just a couple bad drives or a bad half. Like, all game long, he didn't have much to work with. I did think he was kind of holding the ball a little bit longer against Indiana, and I'm glad that you brought up Indiana as well, because I think that definitely changed the perspective of this. If Ohio State had beaten Indiana, I think that this could have been somewhat passed off as, you know, just a bad Saturday.
Yeah.
Or whatever day of the week it was. But it was
an outlier.
Yeah.
Something that hadn't happened. And it happened in both of their biggest games to close the year.
It would be one thing if Ohio State had beaten Indiana, was still, for one more game, the consensus number one and the, at that point, runaway favorite for the national championship. But when you lose to Indiana, you can't really just say, oh man, Ryan Day didn't get his guys up for the game. Now people are questioning, as one of my friends said, he goes, dude, we got 10 byes every year, and Ohio State just went 2-2 in their big games, but Michigan and Texas being the other two.
Sure.
It's like, that is not an unfair judgment when you get beat the exact same way, when you're not giving up pressure against all of the teams that are really replaceable wins. A lot of teams can beat the Minnesotas. A lot of teams can beat, whoever else, a UCLA. I think people made too much of the Washington game and try to turn that into like a big upset game. But I think that knowing what we know now, not just that you lost to Miami, but you lost in a way that also was the way that you lost against Indiana. Low scoring game, you got beat up front. I think that leads itself to questions of, was this what they were all along and we just couldn't see it because Ohio State is just so much better than the Big Ten?
Well, in both games too, that the defense played absolutely well enough to win. So, you know, I remember coming out of the game against Indiana at Lucas Oil Stadium and they gave up those throws down the field and it looked like there were opportunities where Matt Patricia and that defense couldn't handle tempo. So, he gave up 13 points. And then you see 24 on Wednesday night. 7 of that came from the pick six with Julian Sayin down there in the red zone. So 17 points allowed from the defense. being a season high, really, like that should still be enough for Ohio State to win against everybody. And to come out as flat, as unproductive, as inefficient as they were against both Indiana and Miami, that's hard. That's hard to wrap your mind around. It's a tough pill to swallow for the Buckeyes because Ryan Day's whole, you know, resume is built on his offensive acumen and his creativity, and that didn't really bear itself out in either one of those losses. I think that there's going to be time for more of that conversation about, you know, Carson Beck making those plays and the veteran savvy. I mean, he had won, 21 more games than Julian Sain had even played in college. So, you know, he's now 36-6, I believe, in his career, and Julian Sain has played 14 games. So I think some of that, if we're making sweeping judgments, did he play as well as Carson Beck? Did he keep the football in his hands too long? Did he not scramble and make the plays? Like, obviously, Carson Beck out-dueled Julian Sain, but and this is not to make any excuses for him. I think we'll see a different version of him next year, but to give up on him or say that, you know, he's not the guy for Ohio State, which I've seen some people, you know, putting that comment out there in the world already. Let's see what it looks like when he actually does have a year. It is easy to forget that he was a first-time starting quarterback this year.
For sure, and I was still super impressed with the way he played throughout the season. I did kind of think that the Heisman campaign for him was kind of just like aggregate stuff. Like, not that I'm even huge on the Heisman moment, because I'm really not, but the stats of just like compiling, like when like 8 or 9 games go by and you go, wow, this guy's actually got a really good completion percent. Like, I guess he's a Heisman candidate. And I honestly thought that it was kind of like a default Heisman season anyway. Like, it got to the point where the final four, and this is like before Alabama lost to Oklahoma, but we were approaching the end of the season and it was head and shoulders that the quarterback of just the top four teams of just Sam Mendoza, Marcel Reed, Ty Simpson, those are all the top four. And it's like, all right, we're kind of just taking the quarterbacks that have won the most games. Like, there wasn't really that much standout-ish of a year. But even so, I did think that Sain was really good, very useful, very competent, and did so early on, too. And I think one of the biggest feathers in his cap from this season was how he played against Texas when Arch Manning, who also had not really started a considerable amount of games leading up to this season, Arch Manning looked shook. And so I thought that Julian Sain played very well, and I'm confident in him going into the next season as well. I have one more thought about this, and then we'll get to the transfer portal that is loaded with Buckeyes and former Buckeyes, by the way. 2 more minutes. Stick around. Fan Sports. Wait, what day is it? Fan Sports Sunday on the Fan. Browns pregame show, whatever.
Your child's oral health milestones matter. By age 1, see a pediatric dentist to establish good oral health habits. At 7, see an orthodontist to check your child's bite, teeth, and jaws. Around 15, visit an oral and maxillofacial surgeon to have your child's wisdom teeth examined. Remember, milestones met, healthy teeth set. Visit milestonesmet.org.
You still thinking job?
Parents who adopted teens to share their journey.
Nathan has taught me to embrace the moment. Age-wise, I mean, I'm in my late 60s. I'm old enough to be his grandfather. Will he be embarrassed to acknowledge me as his dad? I think the most important thing we can do is let them know that they're safe, that they're valued and cared for and loved, and that they're important.
I knew I wanted to be adopted by him because of how he taught me to be the person who I am today. And it's coming from a dad that didn't expect to become a dad. And I feel very proud to be his son.
That was what he needed. And he was what I needed. Every day is full of new opportunities. That's what it's been about. Realizing the simple things that it takes to make such a huge difference in these kids' lives.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
1, 2, 3!
Here in the Fan is always football o'clock. Proud to be your home of the Buckeyes, Browns, and all the NFL games you can handle. The Fan. Take the Fan with you wherever you go with the Fan app. Download it now, or we'll find you. You bring your lunch money today? Good, give it to us. This is Fan Sports Sunday.
Yep, not Saturday. And not Browns pregame, by the way, Dave. Either way, here we are.
Just call the show whatever you want.
Exactly.
We're just here to talk about the Buckeyes right now.
Ohio State, 14, Miami 24. Colbert team is Austin Ward. Zeke on the board.
Big Zeke.
Yeah.
Let him eat.
All right, here's the question. Final question, then we'll get to the transfer portal stuff.
Okay.
Actually, two final questions, because I want to hear what Isaiah was up to on New Year's Eve, too. When they cut it to three, so at halftime, it's 14-0, and it was an ugly 14.
Yeah.
Now,
and an ugly zero.
Exactly. So you can kind of play the exactly. You can kind of play the hypothetical game, and I love hypothetical scores. So if you erase a pick six, Ohio State was in a scoring position, and you're like, man, we were close to points there. Miami can also say the same thing, too, where they got a fumble punched out. They were in scoring position, so Miami's probably thinking, we could have got some points there, too. Yep. So the hypothetical score can go both ways there. But 14-0 at halftime, Ohio State looks like they are playing far and away their worst game in a long time. And so they come out with the 11-play drive, 82 yards, get the score. And then they, at the end of the third quarter, which bled into the beginning of the fourth quarter, but they put together a 10-play, 75-yard drive that ended up in a Jeremiah Smith touchdown. By the way, I got to say, and I know that, like, Jeremiah Smith, I think some of the stuff gets exaggerated with, like, you know, Joel Klatt saying, oh, he's more athletic than Calvin Johnson. Like, okay. it offends me sometimes how people just almost disregard that Marvin Harrison was here, because I guess it's more impressive when Jeremiah Smith does it as a freshman. And so I think people get caught up in the whole, like, Jeremiah Smith was a freshman last year and all that stuff. But I'll give him credit for this. I don't know if I've ever seen one wide receiver seemingly carry a team the way that he did. And so he got that touchdown to bring it within three. So we're at 17-14 with 13:28 left in the fourth quarter. At that point, did you think Ohio State was going to win?
100%. I was pretty skeptical throughout the first half. And, you know, I was texting with Zach Boren. You know, we do the Mondays on the beat. Yep. And he was like, you seem really down about this, because I thought the game was over after the pick six. It was like everything, the field was tilted so heavily towards Miami. The defensive front was getting home. All the things that we talked about with the pressure, the worst case scenario was coming to fruition. And it was like, I don't know if they're going to find a solution for this. Now, they did. And once that offense found some of that footing, once they put those drives together, the defense was still playing phenomenally well. They did some uncharacteristic things early on. You know, even had Sonny Styles missing a tackle there in the first half. It was like, okay. I mean, even on the other side.
That is first of the year?
Yeah, first missed tackle of the year. It's like, okay, this is all very strange. And I don't know how to explain it, because it is a complete disaster in all three phases when you miss the field goal at the end of the first half as well. But I thought once you got to that point, the defense was playing at a high level, they would be able to get that one more touchdown, and then you escape and just say, well, chalk that up to one bad half and a champion's mentality, a warrior mentality. And I'll tell you, Cole, that even after that drive failed when it was 17-14 and they hit the big punt, and it's like, if Miami's starting on the 10,
yep,
I still feel the same way. I think the Silver Bullets will get that stop. You're not going to see Miami maybe approach that drive the same way that they did, be pretty conservative from where they were on the field. Ohio State will get one more shot back here. They flipped that field position. I still felt good about that. But once the flag hit the ground, that was the final deflating moment for me. I was like, all right, well, that's it. That's it. Wound up being a 20-yard penalty because of the field position and the repunt. It's like that kind of changes everything for me. And that was the one final tipping point. All right, the special teams can't even execute a formation. You get the illegal procedure penalty. Some of this clock is about to be melted away. And again, part of that and a lot of that is up to Ohio State and the tempo that they chose to play with. They did not leave themselves enough possessions to go win this game. And, you know, we expected at some point that when Ryan Day is saying he's going to push the gas pedal and they're going to go up tempo, and that just didn't happen. And we'll never really know why. We know what some of the explanation is in terms of limiting reps and limiting snaps over the course of the year to be fresh and healthy for the playoff, but they didn't put it to any effect really on Wednesday night, at least not to the level that they needed to win that game. So I did feel they were in position to win that game, and I was pretty confident that they would. And it's ironic to me that it wasn't even the sack or the holding call. It was the special teams gaffe that really took the final shred away for me.
Where'd you watch it?
At a house party. I was at a house party during the game, and it was funny because as the game was going on, obviously first half, I'm at a house where I know everyone there, and the game is on the TV, and that's all everyone's watching. At least
can't
all the
relate.
Men were. All the men were, and then my girlfriend and all her friends were also at the party, and by the time that the game had ended, my girlfriend turned around to me and she goes, "We lost? How?"
Oh, that, okay, hold on. That's
you could have watched.
Yeah.
I know.
Look, I don't expect the girls at the party to be as into it as the guys. You know, some of them are, and that's great. I love that. But you got to at least have an idea of what the score, like at least a little bit.
Like perception of the room. Like I was obviously steaming mad.
Yeah. Did she also just not care about you?
Yeah, I know.
Because at no point did she say, "Hey, you seem kind of upset right now. What's getting at you? Oh, wait, Ohio State's about to lose?"
Yeah, I've never stood so long with my arms crossed during a New Year's Eve party, just standing up. Obviously, all the guys, all you're hearing is just groans and moans the entire time of them yelling about the game. And then my girlfriend
turns
to me.
This must have been a really crowded party. Was she on like the other side?
She was in the back. And okay. She came back around and she goes, "We lost, how?" And I'll never forget when I turned to her after the game ended, I looked at her and I said, "We might have been frauds." And it really hurt me to say that because of how good the season was, but the part of us not playing anybody really hurt. I don't think that we were a bad team, but I think the part that really hurt me the most is after the Indiana game, after we had played slow all season long, played the Indiana game, a lot of people said maybe we didn't game plan to beat Indiana. Maybe we thought we could just beat them in the Big Ten championship game. We weren't ready for their pass rush, their defense. And then we get to the Miami game, and it was an instant replay of what we just saw. And so in my mind, like when I watched the Michigan game, it was clear from the moment the game started that Ryan Day had a game plan to beat Michigan. I mean, we saw the very first two plays of the game, even though one of them was a pick, was a shot to Carnell Tate and then Jeremiah on the comeback. Like, we were aggressive in that game, and there was clear. And then even on the defensive side, the entire game we saw Sonny Styles, Narvell Reese, they were mirroring Bryce Underwood so that he couldn't run. And it felt like against Indiana and against Miami, I didn't feel that there was a game plan how we could take advantage of Carson Beck or how we could take advantage of Indiana rushing us the entire game. And that's the part that hurt me, is did we just think that we were better and we were going to be able to play our game and win, rather than how can we beat them? Because both those teams knew how to beat Ohio State, and they made it clear that was the game plan they were trying to do.
By the way, any concern about Arvil Reese's second half of the year not being nearly as productive as his first half?
I think there has to be some. Now, part of this, and Matt Patricia has described, you know, it's almost like using Jeremiah and getting double coverage on that side. It has worked that way as well, where Arvell's getting increasingly more attention pre-snap, and offense is knowing where to go and working away from him. It's a balancing act, Cole. Like, you still have to be able to use him. You need your best players to make those plays. It's not as if, well, Jeremiah's getting double, let's not throw it to him. Like, you still have to put the football in his hands. And I think some of those rush opportunities, they weren't quite as prevalent in the second half, and it is a little bit nitpicky because I don't put any blame whatsoever on the Silver Bullets for the way that, for losing that game on Wednesday night.
No, I don't really.
And I don't assign it to, like, well, Arvell needed to make one or two plays. It would have been great if he did. Make no question about that. But I think the real issue would be for the NFL draft evaluators and talent evaluators and general managers. Like, they might wonder that.
Yeah.
Why did that not happen? But at least for the Ohio State perspective, it's like something we can talk about, but I don't worry about it.
But he's gone anyway, so what difference does it make? I mean, he hasn't officially declared, unless some news has broken in the past hour that I'm not aware of.
Don't scare me.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, this is your job to break the news. So you know, we got to have Austin hop in with an update at some point. But and it's you know, it's going to be one of these silly games that are going to be played. But this was kind of like a showcase game in a way. Because you have like NFL fans all over the place who are like, it's the only game on in that time slot. And so, you know, that there are a couple draft picks. They're putting up the graphics of Mel Kiper. You know, there are basically like seven defensive players in this game who are all in the first round for Mel Kiper on the big board so far. And so all that hype, all that pomp and circumstance. And I know that Reuben Bain and Arvell Reese are not playing against each other. That's kind of a thing we do with quarterbacks too. It's like, well, you know, what did you do on the same field as another good quarterback? And, you know, I think it was like Aaron Rodgers or something one time who was like, well, I'm not playing against Tom Brady. I'm playing against the Patriots defense or something like that.
Yeah.
And so like Arvell Reese and Reuben Bain aren't going head to head, but it is something that works in people's brains of like, okay, they're on the same field. I'm giving them the same amount of attention, and I'm watching Reuben Bain absolutely kicked the you-know-what out of Ohio State, and Arvell Reese isn't as nearly as big of a playmaker. And so that's going to affect perception in terms of like just, you know, schmoes making mock drafts. But once they actually do the full evaluation and actually watch the tape on all the games and compile all the stuff together, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens with the draft. And this is the thing that I hate about teases, is that I know that we're going to get lost in some conversation, and then I got to tease the same thing three segments in a row. Transfers will be discussed at some point in the next... Actually, you know what?
Well, you didn't say when. It's coming in the show at some point.
In the next segment.
Oh.
Okay?
Now there's a promise.
Now there's a promise.
Now we got to do that.
Because I actually have a big criticism of Ohio State this season as it pertains to the transfer portal. I think a lot of people are going to agree. That's next Fan Sports Sunday on The Fan.
The sound of Paul Keel's calling a Buckeye game is erotic.
Oh, yes.
Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Enjoy. My mom is a veteran, and she was injured in the line of duty.
I hurt my leg in a training accident when she was only 2 years old.
She had 7 different surgeries over the span of 9 years, and there were tons of complications.
I couldn't be the mom my kids needed me to be.
She missed so much.
After my last surgery, I got an infection so bad I thought it was going to kill me.
I told her she couldn't leave me yet. There was still so much she had to see. I hadn't even graduated.
I'm doing much better now. I may have lost my leg, but I've gained so much. I'm an active part of my kids' lives.
She can kick a mean soccer ball.
DAV's been there for me and my family. Through thick and thin, they've had our back.
Every year, DAV helps more than 1 million veterans like Sandy get the health and disability benefits they've earned, so they can achieve victories great and small.
My victory is getting my life back. I got my joy back.
We got our mom back, thanks to DAV.
Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Some journeys start small, with small paws and big purpose.
Look how cute you are, you sweet girl.
Every great partnership begins with the first step. Guiding them through the world so one day they can guide someone through life. With shared experience, confidence grows, and the path becomes clear. It takes time, patience, and love. But the reward lasts a lifetime.
Good girl, Bella.
You don't just raise a puppy. You raise a future. Become a Dogs, Inc. puppy raiser. Give a dog a purpose. Give someone hope.
Learn more at dogsinc.org.
The best words to hear at the TSA security checkpoint? You're good to go. All it takes is a little preparation. Get to the airport early. Bring a carry-on bag that fits in the overhead. And have an acceptable ID. Not all state-issued IDs will cut it. Check out tsa.gov/ID and see which TSA acceptable IDs make the grade, like a real ID or passport.
Before you jet, do a little prep, and you're good to go. Check out tsa.gov/ID or the MyTSA app.
Wanted are the keepers of the wild, America's original and most invested conservationists. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving wildlife and the natural landscapes that define our nation. From rugged alpine ridgelines to peaceful tall grass prairies, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. Our funding has led to cleaner water, fresher air, and improved wildlife habitat. From abundant fish and waterfowl populations to robust deer and elk herds, nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters, stewards of the American outdoors.
America's hunters and target shooters, along with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, have invested more than $46 billion to help state fish and wildlife agencies manage and protect wildlife and wildlands across America. For more information, visit OutdoorStewards.org.
Enough already.
We can do more.
Enough already. We can find a cure.
Enough already.
We can do better for our kids.
Enough already. We are relying on you.
We can come together to support Children's Cancer Research Fund, a national nonprofit dedicated to ending childhood cancer that is on the front line of breakthroughs. Because
it's enough already.
Go to childrenscancer.org today.
Bishop and Friends.
At one point she goes, "Oh, I'm worried about Buddy. Is he a murder dog?" No, no. He's not a murder dog. He's just a golden retriever.
Bishop and Friends, sponsored by Diamond Seller.
Weekdays from 9 to noon on The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. You're listening to Ryan Day's favorite radio show. On The Fan, in this time slot, on a Sunday. This is Fan Sports Sunday.
Not today, it's not. Maybe in the regular season it is, but today, not so much. Especially with the news that we're getting into. So, I've been teasing transfer portal stuff. We got a lot of portal news.
Time to pay it off.
Let's go in chronological order. I think one of the big criticisms, very fair criticisms, that one could offer to this Buckeye football team, not that they needed a ton of assistance to begin with because they were pretty loaded. I think they got very little contributions from the portal. A lot of disappointments in there. I'm not going to go scorched earth on Max Clair because my expectations were way lower than everybody else's to begin with. Because I'm like, look, man, there's one football. Like, on the Olympic basketball team, you can take a bunch of players who score 25 points a night for their team, but when they're all in the same lineup, they're not all scoring 25 points. Someone's getting 6 points. And so I kind of just foresaw that Max Clair would be that role of, you know, whatever his stats were at Purdue, where he is the best pass catcher on that team. The only one. The only one that we can name, certainly. And far, the stats actually, the stats showed it. Yeah. He was far and away the number one pass catcher. So he was in a completely different environment. And so I'm not going to go crazy on Max Clair because my expectations for him were kind of low to begin with. There were a couple times a year where he was dropping passes or whatever that I thought he was better than that. But whatever. For his role on the team, I was not expecting anything crazy. So we got Phillip Daniels at right tackle, who solidified that role by the end of the year. And then, like, what else did they get?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that Phillip Daniels did elevate the way he did, because if you look at...
Because Ethan Onyanwa... Hold on.
Yeah.
Because Ethan Onyanwa didn't.
He did not. And you look at the portal acquisitions and the way that we talked about the way this roster was going to be constructed, a lot of the assumption, based on what they paid, which my understanding for Ethan Onyanwa was more than what they paid for Phillip Daniels, based on returning production and the fact that he could have gone to the NFL draft and was considering that at this time a year ago, you thought, well, Onyanwa was going to be at left tackle. Daniels could be an option at guard because we assumed that Austin Sarveld would play right tackle. Like, the way that this lineup actually shook out was really not what anybody anticipated, and definitely not the way Ohio State designed it, because they had to pick up multiple offensive linemen in the transfer portal. Now, it is a credit to Phillip Daniels that he elevated and he held that down. Was he perfect this year? No, not by any stretch of the imagination, but definitely good enough to be holding down that starting job all year, which was not what anyone had anticipated. And thank goodness for the Buckeyes that Austin Sarveld was able to be really good throughout most of this year at left tackle. Had to leave at halftime there with that, got leg whipped, it looked like, on the deep throw to Jeremiah. Had a leg contusion, as Ryan Day said, so couldn't go through in that second half. But, you know, to your point, Cole, you're looking across the board, and the Bo Atkinson, Logan George didn't really factor in for Ohio State's defensive line. They didn't, you know, I think everyone anticipated that there would be more work done for those guys, that they would contribute more. C.J. Donaldson.
Got beat out by the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't a starter. I thought, you know, he and Bo Jackson, you look at Wednesday night, they combined, they averaged 4.7 yards per carry in that game. I thought C.J. Donaldson was actually pretty fine. You know, not explosive, not dynamic. That also wasn't what he was really being brought in to do for Ohio State. You know, but you look at that class and you could see it's underwhelming based on what they paid. You would have thought that the way Ohio State has selectively targeted portal candidates over the last couple of years, that you're talking about like impact players that go out there and really make a mark. And this is not an excuse or waving it away that they didn't get what they wanted or what they thought they might get out of those people that we just named. But at this time a year ago, Ohio State was preparing for the Cotton Bowl semifinal and Texas, and they were then turning the page to the national championship game and playing Notre Dame. So the time that they had to spend on evaluations, the opportunity to have visitors in there to really dive deep into the film, they didn't have that. That, again, I am not making excuses for them, but when Ryan Day has talked about being behind in roster building and roster management, no one feels sorry for Ohio State because they won the national championship, but that can be, you can look back and see, well, maybe that did cost them a little bit in certain spots for the 2025 version because they didn't spend enough time or they didn't have the opportunity or the players that they could pursue were limited. And there would be it's a fine argument if someone disagrees and they say, well, they should be able to do that anyway. And I understand that. But if you're looking back at it, I completely agree with you. That portal class was not good enough. Now, they did lose. They have all of the time. They've already had multiple visitors in throughout this weekend already looking at the defensive line, a tight end from Ohio that's in the picture. They need help in the secondary because Aaron Scott and Bryce West would have ostensibly been part of the plan moving forward.
Are they both surprises?
I don't know that Bryce West is a major surprise. Aaron Scott, I think, very much is because I was sort of picturing a secondary depth chart, what that looks like as the roster is constructed right now. I would have liked to have seen Aaron Scott and Devin Sanchez at corner and Jermaine getting a full year, Jermaine Matthews at nickel. I think that'd have been a really good starting point for secondary in those corner spots in the nickel. But, you know, that's not in the cards now. Bryce West was right there as a backup nickel. There were a lot of offseason conversations that he could surpass Lorenzo Styles. I didn't think that was necessarily going to happen. But Aaron Scott, I think, is very much of this list of Buckeyes that have entered the transfer portal since it opened on Friday. I think he's probably the most surprising out of any of them.
Yeah, and the one who surprised me in terms of just transfers who came in, because like we said, the bust rate on transfers entering this year was alarmingly high. Some of them probably can't foresee, and I'll give you the key example. I, as a Notre Dame fan with an agenda of I want my team to be the best best in the Midwest, and
we're a good disclaimer there.
We're going after the same players. I was not exactly thrilled. But by the way, speaking of Notre Dame versus Ohio State, we'll talk more about David Jacobs in a second. I was not thrilled when Bo Atkinson came here because I thought he was going to be a key player for Ohio State and just make that defense already better than it already was. I was really surprised that he couldn't really find much of a role in this defensive line.
Yeah, I came into it. I was sort of in a wait and see mode with Bo Atkinson personally, you know, and not dissimilar to what you talked about with Max Clair. You know, a lot of Bo Atkinson's production, he had the 7 sacks at North Carolina, and you just looked at that on the surface and said, well, that's pretty good. That's a, you know, top half of the ACC, top quarter of the ACC type productivity. But a lot of it came in the non-conference. A lot of it came earlier in the year. As the season went along for North Carolina, he wasn't having the same type of impact, at least in terms of, you know, sacks and tackles for loss. So I thought there had been an assumption post-spring that, well, he's going to come in and supplant either Caden Curry and Kenyatta Jackson. I didn't really feel that way. Now, I thought that he would contribute more than he did, where there was really no threat whatsoever of him rushing the passer. He was being used, you know, somewhat sparingly to try and stop the run. It wasn't all that effective. You know, how much of that is, you know, missing spring football at Ohio State, transitioning to the daily competitive level and on the practice field? Is there an opportunity for any of that stuff to change for him down the road? We'll see. But, you know, that with him or Logan George, neither one were able to give what people expected that they might. Now, for Logan George, I think that, you know, he missed the last 2 months due to injury. So that's not necessarily on him. But, you know, Bo Atkinson was full go and just not able to really contribute for Ohio State up front.
All right, so we know a lot of Buckeyes are leaving, but how concerned should we actually be about all of this? We'll discuss it next, and Isaiah Jacob is going to give us an hourly update. Maybe he'll break some news that Austin hasn't even seen yet. We'll see. Probably not.
It's probably
pre-recorded, so I think you're going to have zero slip-ups. It's going to be great. We'll look forward to that at 12 o'clock. We'll be back on the other side next. Fan Sports on the Other Fan.
All the Ohio State conversation you can handle. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Your Ohio State flagship station. The Fan.
Would you... Serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor. Now, my fingers are my eyes. I'm Michael Naranjo. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that is worth doing. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. I know it can do a lot of good. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hey guys, 13-year NFL veteran and Super Bowl champion Jason McCourty here, and I'm an innovation ambassador at FAIR, Food Allergy and Research Education. I would say the most challenging thing as a parent of a kid who has a food allergy is probably the ignorance that I myself had in the beginning. I didn't know what anaphylactic shock was. I didn't know the dangers, let alone the things that she needed to be able to have a normal life. When you go to drop your kid off, and every single time in the beginning, we'd have to go through everything she was allergic to. Preparation is everything. And me, for playing football for 13 years, it was all throughout the course of the week, is getting ready for game day. When you're on the field, you're playing for your fans. At home, you're playing for your family. My playbook: read labels, keep it allergy friendly, and have an epinephrine nasal spray as a backup plan. Because with my family safe from food allergens, that's the real victory. Visit foodallergy.org to learn more.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Isaiah Jacob. Let's go over the games that matter for the NFL today. If Atlanta beats the Saints at 1, then the Panthers will clinch the division title. But if the Falcons win, the Buccaneers will hold that final playoff spot. The Broncos, Jaguars, and Patriots are also playing for the AFC's number 1 seed, while the Jaguars and Texans are still fighting for the AFC South. And then tonight, Baltimore-Pittsburgh are in a winner-take-all for the final spot in the playoffs. Finally, one game that does not matter outside of Myles Garrett being one sack away from the regular season record, also potentially Kevin Stefanski's final game as head coach, the Browns travel to Cincinnati for the Battle of Ohio at 1. How about NBA action? The Cavs are trying to push a 4-game winning streak. Also, the Blue Jackets are back on the ice today, facing the Pittsburgh Penguins at 3. Pre-game coverage begins right here on The Fan at 2:30. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Garnish your Bloody Mary with sports talk. You're listening to Fan Sports Sunday.
I'll never sell you short again. The accusations of you just pre-recording them all and mailing it in.
You like that?
Like I would have done.
You like that?
Yeah, you like that, Kirk Cousins?
Wow.
That was one live one.
Yeah.
Before today.
The prophet going live.
I'm seeing at 1 o'clock. We don't have any pre-recorded ones in the system, so I guess we're doing two live today.
Wow. We'll combo that one.
Yeah, there we go.
I just like you sneaking in the analysis and the critiques into the news.
He brought up a lot of topics that we're going to hit later in the show. We're kind of emptying the clip as far as Buckeye content goes right out of the gate. So we had a huge Buckeye hour. We're not necessarily done with it because we got a couple other things to wrap up here. But a lot of that stuff, the Myles Garrett myth that's going to be taking place. Definitely Black Monday tomorrow, so we'll discuss NFL coaches that may or may not be coaching at their current locations next season, so we'll discuss all that. So that was a great teaser for the rest of the show.
Phenomenal. It was kind of an update, kind of just like what's going on, what I think about it. I can't be objective during an update.
Poor Kevin Stefanski.
You're telling me.
I think I saw something. I will save it for later, whatever. But anyway. A couple of things that I wanted to bring up based off of what you said in the last segment. One thing that caught my eye, or ear rather, when you said that Ohio State brought in Ethan Onyanwa and Phillip Daniels to be the bookends of the offensive line to play both tackle positions.
Yeah.
We didn't necessarily foresee at this time last year, Austin Sarrivelt bumping out the tackle. And so who would have been the other two starting offensive linemen? So it would have been the returners would have been Hinsman and Shibola. And so Did you anticipate that Luke Montgomery would have spent the year as a backup?
No. So I didn't know that Daniels would actually be starting caliber tackle. And I don't think that Ohio State did either. He had only played those four games. I think he started four games at Minnesota the year before as a redshirt freshman. And they needed to find three guys who would have been capable of playing tackle, because there was going to be a little bit of surplus talent available on the interior, because you had Luke Montgomery coming back, you had Carson Hinsman, you thought that Josh Padilla could be on the rise, and Tegra Shibola had played a lot of football for Ohio State. So they were trying to get to a point where there was not going to be experience to start with at tackle. And I think a lot of the assumption would be that either Austin Sarrivelt or Tegra Shibola could have kicked out to play tackle. and that Philip Daniels may be a year away. He really changed the dynamic with a very productive spring, building on that in training camp, and suddenly like the picture had changed dramatically. So I didn't know that Daniels would necessarily take one of those starting jobs, because I think we all assumed, based on, you know, the NFL draft feedback, the level of investment that Ohio State put into Ethan Onyanwu, that one of those jobs was going to go to him, and then you would have the ability to potentially have a three-man competition between Saraveld kicking out the tackle, as that became like a realistic option, you know, going into March of last year. You know, Tegra Shibola, you know, we pick him apart. You know, he was not as reliable as he needed to be. There was inconsistency before the injury that knocked him out of the Cotton Bowl. But the physical tools were never in question, really. He's dating back to his initial recruitment. There was always conversation about whether he could play at tackle, whether he needed to be at guard, what was the best position for him. He would have had the opportunity to kick out there as well. And I think that maybe we'll look into the future and Philip Daniels will be better suited to playing guard. I don't know. But you still have the same option now if you are able to keep Austin Saraveld and Philip Daniels around, and you have Ian Moore on the rise this offseason. Because I think you look at the way he played in the second half against Miami, and he very much needs to be part of the plan moving forward and the solution. So I don't, there is a lot of justifiable skepticism about the Ohio State offensive line based on what happened against Indiana and Miami. I think you give these guys and the talent that's on hand another offseason to develop and grow. I don't even know what the best five-man formation looks like for them, but they have enough talent and depth on hand to get that job done, in my opinion, with another year of growth. But that's Tyler Bowen. I think he's had 1 year as the offensive line coach, and it didn't end the way anybody wanted, so can't take any of that for granted. We'll see what they do there, but I think that they're in a pretty good spot there.
Craig in the YouTube chat, regular YouTube commenter, says there are too many players I want to transfer and don't want to compete. You sound old, but let's talk about some of them. Lincoln Kienholz, we know, is going to Louisville. I am not that concerned about that. I think that there are many examples of quarterback, or really just anywhere. We could spin some of this audio from Northern Illinois coach Thomas Hammack in a little bit. But I wouldn't be too fearful about all these guys leaving. Quarterback's a unique one, because that's a position that doesn't rotate and there aren't multiple on the field. And so other positions, corner, defensive line rotates like crazy in football. Yep. But not, I don't think anyone's really concerned. Were you much of a Lincoln Kienholz guy? Because that was a big debate. And I think Ryan Day even said, actually, and he didn't say this until after the spring game, understandably so, there's the gamesmanship of him versus the media and how this would play out. I totally get why he didn't reveal this. But after the spring game, he confessed that Lincoln actually had a lead over Saiyan heading into the spring game. Yep. And then Saiyan had so much better of a spring game than Lincoln had. And so that kind of, as he put it, brought them back to 50-50. It's easy for me to say, because I don't watch practice. I only watch the spring game. And when Saiyan was that much better, it's like, yeah, 50-50. Okay, whatever. It's like, Saiyan's got to be way ahead. Evidently, as it played out, Saiyan won the job. What was your breakdown? Now, we don't have to like rehash, you know, months worth of content, but just briefly, Lincoln versus Saiyan, the whole QB competition, how close did you think it was?
Yeah, even the day before the spring game, which I think is one of the more interesting practices of the season for Ohio State, based on the way it went. Like Julian Saiyan and Lincoln Kienholz had a much better day. It was the Friday coaches clinic practice, so it was one of the five that we got to watch. And really, that and the student appreciation day and the two earlier practices, like Lincoln Kienholz was outperforming Julian Saiyan in all four of those. The only one that, and that's not the complete picture. That is not all 15 practices. That's not the workouts and everything else. But when we were forming, you know, our opinion in preparing to cover that quarterback battle throughout the offseason, it was like, well, four out of the 5 days, Lincoln Kienholz was better than Julian Saiyan then. Now, the one that everyone saw and that was broadcast on television was Julian Saiyan lighting it up in the horseshoe. And that, I think, made it a little bit more complicated and fed into this notion that the quarterback battle wasn't legitimate, that it wasn't real, that we spent 3 months all rehashing. But there was a lot to like about Lincoln Kienholz. Now, at no point did anyone say the ceiling is higher for Lincoln Kienholz. That was obviously going to be Julian Saiyan, with all the things that we saw with the ball placement, the decision making. He can still get better at all that, and will need to heading into 2026. But you know, Lincoln's dual threat ability, I think some of the swagger that he plays with, the leadership that he had shown, He was an Iron Buckeye in the summer. That's not for nothing. They don't usually just, you know, hand that out to anybody. All that stuff lent itself to Lincoln Kennels could and had proven himself to Ryan Day and Billy Fessler and Brian Hartline that he could really help that team if need be. Now, Julian took off on that rocket ship and he was a Heisman Trophy finalist, but you look at the choice that Lincoln made to come back, I thought it was a really good one for him. He's now had 3 years of development with Ryan Day, and Jeff Brohm tends to know some things about quarterback development as well. So at that seems like a pretty good spot and another, I think, endorsement of what people see could be in the future for Lincoln Kienholz. He's going to be a good quarterback, in my opinion. Is he going to be an NFL caliber accurate passer? Probably not, but I think he can win a lot of games for Louisville.
Couple more that we got. Devontae Armstrong, one of the twins from St. Ed's. Shocked that only one of them jumped in the portal, but that may be an indicator that one of them is better than the other.
Yeah, I think there has been a pecking order there. We'll see if any of that changes. But again, you're looking at the competitive opportunities and the playing time that's available. As it stands right now, unless there is something that qualifies as a surprise in the next couple days or in the week ahead till the portal closes, it's going to be tough to crack that lineup. So that if you see, you know, lower third, which is sort of the way I view this now anyway, Cole, like churn on the bottom third of Ohio State's roster, that's the normal order of business now. So if you've got two guys ahead of you before you could try and get in that too deep, you're probably not going to be around for much longer.
Yeah, and then a couple others that I think may have caught people's eye, because there were some, like Demarion Witten and Logan George, I don't think people are freaking out about, whatever. Bryson Rogers, we already knew because he was one of the early ones. Yeah. James Peoples was definitely an interesting one. The thing about James Peoples for me, and obviously with his role on the team this year, it wasn't a tremendous role. We talked about them bringing in C.J. Donaldson. That first and foremost kind of tells you that James Peoples is not a bell cow of a back. And then, oh, never mind the fact that a true freshman won the job by the end of the year anyway. So I don't think that Ohio State fans are going to be freaking out about James Peoples. But the funny thing about it is that I remember last year in the non-conference, Ohio State, I don't even remember who they played, but Ohio State had just a walkover of a non-conference schedule. And so because of that, James Peoples was able to play a lot of games in the non-conference because yeah. You don't need Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins playing into the fourth quarter of blowout games against MAC schools anyway.
Right.
And so I remember from the post-game press conferences, every single time, the first three games of the year before they got to the Big Ten schedule, but every single time that Ryan Day, who was frequently asked about Travion and Quinshon, every single time he was asked a question about them, he would voluntarily, he kept shoehorning in James Peoples, like into a bunch of Travion and Quinshon questions. And he's like, I can't forget about James Peoples, and he played really well too. And I don't know how much of that was just like he was bewildered by him or was just like, or maybe he was trying to recruit his own roster away from transfers or something like that. But he fooled me into thinking that James Peoples is going to have a really good role this year. So I don't know how much of that is a disappointment or what, but I do know that Ryan Day was going out of his way last year to talk about James Peoples, even when everyone else wanted to talk about the other two.
Yeah. And then, as you mentioned, not just with Bo Jackson, but Isaiah West sort of passing him by as a true freshman as well. I give James Peoples a lot of credit for continuing to work because all the things that you mentioned, he had plenty of offseason hype behind him. Now, he hadn't earned it. He had not been a starting caliber back, and he had, once you got into the Big Ten, once you got into the College Football Playoff a year ago, you know, Quinshon and Travion were handling all that work, and they were not getting James Peoples involved in, but there was still an assumption that the work that he got, the experience that he got as a true freshman, you know, building on that into a spring and into the summer, that he would be able to be, if not 1A, at least 1B for this Ohio State backfield, and that didn't happen, and that could be difficult, but he never, based on what I saw, you know, was crying and whining about it. He kept working. He had the highlight reel, you know, hurdle touchdown late in the year. They were still putting him out there. He was getting involved as a kickoff returner on Wednesday night in the Cotton Bowl. I think Ohio State still saw there was a lot of explosiveness, that he was still committed to putting in the day-to-day work. And, you know, if he had decided to stay, probably it would have to have been for less money, if I'm speculating and trying to read those tea leaves about what's happening, because you're going to have to pay now more than you thought you would have had to for Bo Jackson or Isaiah West, and that will come at the expense of somewhere else, most likely. Playing time, potential NIL opportunities, all those things factored into it. I don't blame James Peoples for making that move at all. And in fact, I give him a lot of credit for seeing it through the way he did.
One Buckeye literally could not wait to leave the program. We'll talk about that one. You already know who it is. We'll talk about that one next. Fan Sports Sunday.
We're the highest rated sports radio station in America. There's no joke there. We just are. The Fan. Ohio sports destination.
Men, the new...
That glaucoma is one of the leading causes of blindness.
Because there are often no early symptoms, nearly half of those with glaucoma may not even know they have it until vision loss has occurred.
I was diagnosed with normal tension glaucoma in July of 2020. And what we found out at that point was I had already lost 40% of my sight. And you think it only affects people that are, you know, 75 or older, retired, grandparents. And that's not the reality of it.
I didn't think at all glaucoma was going to affect me because I didn't know of anyone that had glaucoma, no one in my family. When you have glaucoma, you can't get back that sight that you lost. And so early detection and treatment is vitally, vitally important.
Don't miss life's most beautiful moments. Schedule an eye exam today.
National Glaucoma Research, a Bright Focus Foundation program, offers free resources and tips for healthy vision.
Learn how to protect your sight at stopglaucoma.org.
You know a thing or two about the moments in life that matter. You've seized those moments to embrace joy, accomplish great things, and build meaningful relationships. Is it time now to sit back and reflect on a life well lived? Maybe. Or maybe there's more to be done. Maybe this is the most important moment you've encountered yet. By volunteering with AmeriCorps Seniors, you can seize the moment, lend a hand, and get back more than you give. We connect you to local volunteer organizations with opportunities that fit your schedule and match your interests. Through AmeriCorps Seniors, you can support people in times of need and make your community stronger. You can become a companion to your older neighbors, brightening their days with friendship. You can even become a mentor for young people, serving as a role model and enriching their lives. Are you ready to seize your moment? Visit AmeriCorps.gov/your moment and get started today.
Hey there, Jane Lynch here. You want to hear something funny? Too bad. You want to hear something uplifting that will inspire you? Good. Because today, I want to talk to you about Direct Relief, a humanitarian organization that does seriously good work when it counts. Fires, hurricanes, earthquakes. When disaster strikes, Direct Relief immediately shows up with medicines, medical supplies, and everything doctors and nurses need to save lives. Let's ship her out! Every day across the United States and around the world, they're making an enormous difference. If someone needs help, Direct Relief helps. No politics, no red tape. Hey, what you doing over there?
Oh, I'm packing insulin for kids with diabetes.
See, every box here is literally a lifeline for someone in critical need. So check them out at directrelief.org. You might just bring a smile to someone's face.
It's been a real journey since 2014 when I first had my injury. I realized that my home was just not working for me and that it was time to ask for help. Home Star Troops is really giving me my life back. The shower allows me to go in and turn around with my chair, pull down storage racks, automated door systems, hours of my morning given back to me. Adaptive sports are a huge part of my life, a huge part of my healing journey as well. Home Star Troops helped with making sure that I had a home gym so that I can continue to train. This past year, I was able to host Thanksgiving in my home. And it was the first time I was able to have my whole family in one place, and I was able to contribute to the meal. There are a lot more veterans in need, and Homes for Our Troops is going to be there to help them too.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post-9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
Join the Fan weeknights at 6 for the Buckeye Show. And if you're asking if it's just a bunch of homers rooting for all things Ohio State, yes, yes it is. Proud to be your flagship home of the Buckeyes, the Fan, Ohio sports destination. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a mix of clouds and sunshine here for your Sunday, with temperatures warming up into the lower 30s here for this afternoon. Winds will be fairly light at about 5 miles per hour. And then as we head into the work week, we are tracking a nice warming trend as we get back up into the mid-40s here on Monday with a partly cloudy sky. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets Hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Nation. Live, local, and still slightly drunk.
I'm not drunk, all right? I just have a speech impediment.
This is Fan Sports Sunday.
Cole Bartemus, Austin Ward, the Prophet Zeke. By the way, from earlier, I don't want to make it sound, and I'm not worried about them like hearing about this, because look, I told you about the party where I was watching the...
I don't think they're listening to this show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, I don't want it to sound like I didn't have a good time, because I had a great time at the party.
Sounded like you might not have.
No. Look, I'm just saying it was dicey for like the first 20 minutes until we got the game on the TV. Once we got the game on the TV, then it was all fine. But I had a good time at the party. But like I said, like you said, if it's not like a football watching crowd at an Ohio State playoff game, they're probably not driving around listening to local sports talk radio anyway. I just want to clarify, I had a good time. I would also like to say this.
Somebody's text was, they were blowing up. Somebody
was
listening.
Not true. I was just
in
thinking.
In the chat. Yeah.
I was just thinking about that in the break. I'm like, I had a good time, but like, I made it sound like I didn't have a good time at the party. So I just don't want to tell an incorrect story. That's all. Let me tell you a story about this though, because Isaiah was telling us about his story about he was watching New Year's Eve and his girlfriend wasn't watching the game, and she comes over after the game. She's like, "We lost." And he's like, you couldn't tell that I was upset the entire night?
Arms crossed.
I'll say this. And you tell me if this is a bad move by Isaiah. This was like, I'd say within the past couple of months. I run into Isaiah at a local establishment. I go out of my way to see him.
Uh-huh.
And like, he's in a group. And I'm like,
you walked up to me. You didn't come to the bar to see me.
No,
you saw me at the bar.
I bumped into you.
Yes.
I bumped into him and I'm like.
On purpose.
Exactly. And I'm like, I think that's Isaiah. And so like, he's sitting at a table with all of his friends. And like, I'm not trying to like just bring myself into the front and like pull up a chair and be like, "Hey guys," like I'm not trying to do all of that.
Okay.
But I saw him and I'm like, that's my boy Zeke.
That's the prophet over there.
That's the prophet. And so I got to go and say hi to him. And so I did. And then it was kind of like a blow by and he didn't introduce me to his girlfriend who was sitting right next to him.
I've thought about this situation since then. And I'd love to hear your side of the story. I was kind of in the same places you were, is like, should I have talked to Cole more? Because you were there with your friends, and we're at a bar that's very tight. I'm sitting down. I'm not on the end seat. I'm in the middle seat.
Yeah, I had to reach over some people.
So I reached over one of my friends and dapped up Cole and said, "Hey man, how we doing?"
Uh-huh.
My girlfriend's sitting to the right of me. She's pushed back into the corner.
Oh,
she can barely.
I would have really like up against the wall too. So I would have had to like really reach, even like probably put my hand on somebody's shoulder to lean forward so I could like reach her.
And it's loud
this is
in
a
there.
Booth situation?
It's not quite a booth, but it's high top, and we've got another high top right to the back of us.
Okay.
And so I'm kind of pressed in. There's another guy behind me.
See, knows we're
table.
Talking about to whom it may concern.
Yeah. So one of the tightest bars in Grandview, and so there's no moving around. So I thought about, like, should I introduce my girlfriend over myself, my friend over to Cole? And I was like, it's probably not that big of a deal. Me and Cole dapped up. I'm gonna let him enjoy his night. I don't want to put him in a pit stop where now he's screaming over me to say hello to my girlfriend.
Yeah, it's also loud in there and there's stuff going on.
So I was like, it's not the end of the world. If we were standing, yeah, that's completely different. But the bar table, that's what kind of that hurt it.
I'm glad that you guys could clear the air on this situation right now, because it's clearly been on both of your minds.
We've both
for
been
the last
thinking
end.
About it. Hey, remember that once? It was whatever night Michigan was playing USC. I remember that being up on the TV. So that long time ago. So regular season
after the Illinois game, I believe.
Probably. Okay. So wow, that would have been like early October by this point.
Yeah, we got 2.5 months of stewing.
I'm glad we could get this settled, because I was kind of like, because I mean, Isaiah's with his friends, so I don't want to just like interrupt their conversation. I just wanted to say a quick hello, but I've also kind of got the sense, like, even though I was trying to make it quick, I'm also kind of like, Isaiah kind of seems like he was trying to make that quick. Yeah.
Was it too quick?
I'm like, Isaiah kind of seems like he was trying to make that quick too. And like,
in a way
where I'm almost like, did he just like blow me off? But then I'm kind of like,
I would never blow you off.
Did he think that I blew him off and just was kind of like brushing by, like, "Hey man, good to see you," and just keep it moving? Like, so I don't know. That was just a weird thing. And then you mentioned your girlfriend in the story, and I'm just like, I bet she was sitting right next to him at that table.
Do I know her?
Exactly.
She just clearly doesn't know Cole now because I didn't introduce as I should have.
Uh-huh.
And all my friends, when you left, they were like, who was that? And so I was like, oh, maybe I should have introduced him to everyone. But it's now we're past it. Next time I see you at the bar, I'll make sure you shake my girlfriend's hand.
That's great.
We've
really solved this.
Yeah.
Got to the bottom of it.
Hey. All right, we got other problems. Why did I even do this? So I hate like goofy radio transitions, and so I just try. I hate them, and I almost did one right there.
No, you did it.
Of you saying no,
it wasn't goofy.
Do it.
It was a professional segue.
I hate the goofy radio transitions because they're so tacky, and I just did one where you're like, hey, you guys solved a problem. Well, one problem that we can solve. Blah blah blah. Okay, so I don't even want to do it. Just here's the deal. We don't have to do a transition. Simply put. Jelani Thurman was in the transfer portal like 2 minutes after that game ended.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching the game. The game's over. As soon as it hits triple digits, this crowd of people who already didn't want the game on still had a great time. They didn't want the game on.
They weren't concerned about the transfer portal?
No. As soon as triple digits, it's okay. Now it's New Year's Rockin' Eve, and now it's Ryan Seacrest on the screen. The football fans of the party didn't want to see any of that either. So they're like, get this off the screen. We're done.
Yeah.
And then like 2 minutes later, I'm looking at my phone, Hayes Fawcett, who I don't know who that is because I only get my recruiting news from Austin and Berm, but Hayes Fawcett is tweeting out graphics of Jelani Thurman entering the transfer portal. I'm like, this dude's in the locker room right now. So one of two things has happened. Either he's DMing Hayes Fawcett in the locker room, which that probably didn't happen because he already had a graphic created, or he told Hayes Fawcett or his representation told people, hey, you can go ahead and just put my name in the portal the second we lose.
Yeah, and I think it's more likely to be option B with the agents. And that's the part that I maybe Jelani Thurman went in there and said, here's the green light and go ahead and do this. I'm out of here. The season's over. It doesn't matter now. I don't really believe, given everything that Jelani Thurman has poured into the program, that he's the one, or it was an angry response to the loss and like, I'm going to do this and lash out and get out of here and put the spotlight on myself. I don't believe that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know for sure because I wasn't in the locker room when that tweet and when that message was sent out. But I do see this a lot with the agents who, for whatever reason, have it in their mind that this is in the best interest of their clients to announce that they're going in the transfer portal early, to put out that flashing neon sign that they're open for business, that you can send their offers. I think the timing was truly bizarre and takes away from Jelani Thurman because it opens up this opportunity that you talk about their client as potentially having making a selfish decision immediately after the loss where a lot of his teammates are going through.
Yeah. It looks like an F you to the program.
It does look like that.
It looks like I can't wait to leave here.
And what advantage does that actually give the agent of Jelani Thurman? Because everyone could have reasonably
assumed.
You can't
join the portal till 3 days after that anyway.
And if you want to tell these other programs, which Cole, you know, tampering is not actually illegal because no one's ever been
punished for it.
I guarantee you, and this happened with Lincoln Keenholz as well, that because he found his home very quickly at a spot that is high priority.
I don't think Lincoln was one of these, but these guys who go in with no contact tags, how can that not be tampering?
It is 100% tampering. And that, again, maybe the player themselves is not having a lot of these conversations or fielding contract offers or NIL or whatever, but they're aware, and that's why you pay for agents. So I just think that disgusting is probably too strong of a word. I was very disappointed by the way that agency appeared to handle it and giving that green light at that time, because I don't think that the reward is there for that kind of risk of, I don't know, the personal embarrassment or selfishness that you could then potentially cast on Jelani Thurman. So, you know, their agents could have already been dealing with potential offers for the last month behind back channels, closed doors. Doing that right after the game, I thought was pretty distasteful.
All right, we've been talking a lot of college football. We're going to transition to a little bit more NFL. We got games starting at 1. We'll break down some of those later on in the show. But next, Isaiah is going to correct a mistake that I made earlier this week. Pressure's on you, son. That's coming up in 2 minutes. Do not go anywhere, Fansports.
There was a man who couldn't stand.
A mom who couldn't wait.
A scientific community that said it couldn't be done.
And then you.
And then I.
And then we. Brought neuromuscular disease into screaming color with the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
For 75 years, our voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
We've willed the impossible into existence.
We've pushed the science,
raised the funds,
shifted the narrative,
and transformed the reality of life with neuromuscular diseases.
For 75 years, we've built communities together,
established the field of neuromuscular medicine,
and made it thrive.
Call that a legacy.
Call it impact.
Call it momentum.
Just call it ours.
Because it's the generations of community heroes that give MDA the strength we have today.
And until neuromuscular disease is a thing of the past, you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Matty Ice is currently bathing himself in creamy jalapeno dip.
And I've officially run out of ways to tease this show.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays at noon.
The Fan.
During weekend programming,
pants are optional.
Look at my butt!
However, leather chairs may have been a bad choice.
You're listening to Fan Sports Sunday.
Cole Bartemus, Austin Ward, Isaiah Jacob is the combination today. Got to keep reminding you at the beginning of every segment because, you know, on these shows, you really never know.
And today's Sunday.
Yeah, and today is Sunday. Not Saturday, like I said, coming out of the first segment, and definitely not Browns pregame show. Although we are somewhat of a Browns pregame show because we got NFL kicking off in half an hour. So we'll get into a little bit more NFL talk here in the back half of the show. I made a mistake earlier in the week.
That can't be right.
Yeah, it can't be. In fact, I may be making a mistake now because I try not to just steal segment ideas from my day job of Rothman and Ice Monday through Friday. I'm producing their shows to whoever didn't know that. But I try not to just steal, because that feels lazy. Like, even if we have good discussions and discussions that are worth expounding upon, I try not to just steal. But we actually had one that I thought was kind of fun. So, and it was Ice's idea, so I'll give him the credit. But we had a 2026 sports wish list. At the turn of the year, what do you want to see in 2026? I came up with five things, and I'm pretty sure three of them are centered around 2027. So I don't even think I did it right.
Oh, no. That's like the biggest sin.
I know. So the first thing that I had was a Notre Dame 2026 national championship. Guess when the national championship is in? Late January of 2027.
Like the latest in January that could possibly be.
Exactly. I also had that I hope for 2026 that the impending MLB lockout that's definitely taking place after this season doesn't bleed too far into next baseball season. Well, next baseball season is 2027. So that also didn't make much sense. So Isaiah, I hope that you put together whatever, and this is your perspective. Doesn't have to be my favorite teams. Doesn't have to be Austin's favorite teams. This is all you. Your 2026 wish list for what you want to see happen in the sports world in this calendar year. Emphasis on in this calendar year, because I couldn't really follow those rules and they weren't that hard.
Now I'm looking back at my list to see if I think I've got
great. Nope. You got a Ron Burgundy. This read what you wrote.
Okay, the very first thing that I wrote on here. And it's because of what we're in right now. I want the playoff format. I want the darn playoff format. I want the format. And the reason for that is, I talked about this on The Money too this morning, is because I don't want to be in this weird place where we have these national championships that are in different formats from what's going forward. And so 20 years from now, I don't want them to say, oh, well, that was the 12-team format, or that was the 4-team format, or that was the BCS format. Now it's harder. I want it to be whatever it's going to be for the next 20 years, yet again, because Ohio State's in the pocket right now where they can win a lot of them. So if it's going to be 16 teams in 2040, then I want us to win the championships now on however it's going to be moving forward.
Boy, that is asking an awful lot.
Yeah, I know,
of
right?
A college football playoff.
Can we be consistent?
We've had 3 in my lifetime, and I was born in 99, and so if you bump it back just literally 2 years to 97, we would have 4 different formats in my lifetime.
It's ridiculous.
I'm not old. I'm 26.
Yeah, but even, Cole, like, the last 2 years are different formats from what we're talking about, because even if the number has remained the same with the 12, we saw them change the way that they seeded it. So they can't even agree from year to year, and there's going to be tweaks and adjustments. Maybe what's happened with the bye teams not winning again in 1-7. The great Indiana Hoosiers and the wizard Kurt Cignetti, apparently he's the only guy.
More on him in a little bit, actually.
He's the only guy who can solve this riddle of taking 25 days off. I guess he Googled the answer to that. But look, they're going to change it again. And I completely agree with the prophet. You have to find some answer and stick with it, because if they keep adjusting this, you create new problems every year with what they're doing, and you're addressing one old problem that may not ever happen again. So it's ridiculous that we keep doing this, but if it's going to be 16, which it probably will be, it should be that in 2026 or January of 2027, and then roll with that to 2040 so that we can actually bring some kind of stability to the sport, because God knows there's not any in any other part of it.
I think that playoff expansion in college football is really stupid. I think it really bastardizes the regular season, which I like that every league kind of has their own thing, although they're all kind of just forming into the NBA, NHL, where it's going to be, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL goes 8-8 at some point in the AFC, NFC. But I like when everybody has their own thing, and college football had it, and now they're taking it away. But the problem is that if a lower seed, I can't take away Ohio State's championship from last year. As much as I think that the playoffs doesn't need 12 teams, and that Ohio State and Notre Dame, by the way, shouldn't have been in the championship game because they shouldn't have even been there, because we shouldn't have even had 12 teams to begin with. If they actually win those games, I kind of can't just pretend like those games didn't happen. Like, for example, if Indiana wins the championship this year, they're the one seed. You can say they would have won the championship in any format because they were the number one seed. They would have appeared in every format. They would have had a championship game in every format. And who are we to say that in other formats they would have lost?
Yeah.
Like, that's dumb. But if you have like a 7 or 8 seed, I don't like that Ohio State and Notre Dame. By the way, that requires my favorite team to beat Northern Illinois, which shouldn't be that hard.
Mm-hmm.
So in those scenarios, I'm like, man, they shouldn't be there to begin with, but I kind of can't just pretend that those games didn't happen. What else you got on your list? As I just cut off Austin, I'm sorry.
The next one that I've got is two teams that haven't been in the Super Bowl in the past 10 years make it to the Super Bowl this year.
This is great, because Ice and I had two completely different things on our list, and it was actually very fitting for him and very fitting for me. He had the whole, like, you know, throw your flowers at people or whatever that phrase is. You know, give someone
give flowers.
Your yes. Yeah. So he's what he wanted in 2026 was a healthy Joe Burrow, a healthy Patrick Mahomes, a healthy Lamar Jackson, a healthy Josh Allen, because the NFL is better with all of them. I literally wrote on mine, I hope the Chiefs go away for good. So we have two completely different agendas. So Isaiah, I'm with you, bro.
So, but
teams.
Do you care which two, or you just want two?
It doesn't
teams?
Matter to me which ones it is. I mean, for the AFCs, I look at the past 10 years. I mean, the AFC, all we need to avoid is the Chiefs. They're already out. You got the Bengals. They're already out.
Yep.
And then there's Pats and Broncos, which they're both in.
This is a different Patriots. But
they're different
though.
Eras.
I don't think and the I Patriots know. Are nearly as unlikable as they were. Mike Vrabel is very likable, and Drake May is like cute and adorable and funny or whatever. And, you know, Drake May or whatever the nickname is, and his wife's making like baking videos on TikTok. This is not the Tom Brady Belichick Patriots. I know it's the same logo, same. Maybe you just hate Boston sports, which is fine.
That's
because
fine.
That fan base can get a little crazy, but I think that this is much more likable than those two. So I don't even know if I would count them as like, oh, that's just the same teams winning all over again. This is different.
But it's the same fan base, though. And that's where, for me, I'm a Browns fan. So some fan bases have been spoiled in the last 10 years,
yeah.
a.k.a. the Chiefs. The Pats came off of an incredible run. Do they need to be back in the Super Bowl yet? I don't think so. But
yeah.
I wouldn't hate if they were. The NFC's a bunch more teams. You're talking Eagles, 49ers, Rams, Buccaneers, Falcons, Panthers. So there's a little bit less room over there for error. You're really looking at the Seahawks and the Bears. But I'd like to see some new teams.
Okay, so a couple of years ago, first of all, I hope this audio works, because if not, this entire thing is going to be a waste of everybody's time. But Bill Burr came on Rothman and Ice a couple of years ago. So this would have been like in the middle of the Mac Jones era where it wasn't going so good, and this is what he said.
If your victory as a Cleveland Browns fan is New England's not good anymore, I mean, I feel bad for you.
That's perfect audio.
Guilty.
I feel bad for you. That just applies in almost any Cleveland Browns scenario that there is. So
it literally is.
Yeah. I mean, why did you need that, Bill Burr, to feel sympathy for the Browns fans? It's called the Factory of Sadness for a reason.
And they're over here weighing football.
What else?
Next one. All right. How about this one? I really want this to happen, because I think right now, as we're getting ready for the NBA season to start up, I like the NBA, but I know it's not for everyone. And I don't think it has the popularity it once did, but I know how to bring it back.
Ooh.
Put Bron back in Cleveland. Give him the farewell
Stop.
Tour. Let him run one more time. And I'm a Cavs fan, so I'd love that too.
I think he should have already been there. Should have gone last year.
I cannot stand how Cavaliers fans just allow LeBron to hit them and quit them. It drives me nuts.
Open arms.
Look, if it leads to you winning, then if it makes you a better basketball team, so be it. That's fine. I get it. But at the same time, like, just groveling for LeBron to always come back to Cleveland when Like, this is the girl that manipulates you, bro. Like, we all know this situation, but it's LeBron, so Cleveland fans put up with it. And I'm just like,
yeah, but she's a smoke show.
I know. And trust me, I would probably do the same thing in real life, not just the basketball sense. But I'm just watching this from afar. I'm like, can you guys, like, have a spine? Next.
Next one. More coaching turnover, just like this year.
In which sport?
Oh. College football.
Oh, my God, dude.
Give me more.
I don't know if you... You may get it, because Kalen DeBoer's on thin ice next year.
Yeah, and that would create some dominoes, for sure. But the level, in having that many powerhouse programs available, I don't think you can duplicate that. But you might. I mean, I guess we can't rule it out in this day and age where your first three-game losing streak, you're getting fired even after winning 10 games every single year and being one win away from going to compete for a national championship, and then you're unemployed 10 months later. If that's the level of patience or impatience that we're going to see, maybe this will just become the new norm with the coaching cycle. I certainly hope not, because we're wasting, and by we, I mean athletic directors, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
On people to not work. And
Is Ward Manuel still the AD at Michigan?
Well, as we sit here right now, he is. But
how?
I think that they are trying to make sure that they can proceed with firing him for cause, just to make sure that they're not on the hook for... Well, they don't have to. I think we can all see firing for cause in like multiple sports that he oversees, not just football.
Exactly.
It shouldn't be that complicated. But and people have been saying this for months that Ward Manuel was on the way. I don't know how that happened or how the Wolverines backed into a competent coach without really running a search at all when Penn State spent months trying to do the same thing and couldn't.
I know. I actually think this is kind of tough for Buckeye fans, because Kyle Whittingham in general has been a very like high approval rating type of figure in college football, because he was at the same place for like 20 plus years. He didn't like sell out and take a big check. Now, I mean, well, he did now, but just in general, like, he's been a very likable figure. He's made Utah football good. He was there from the transition from, I guess it would have been the WAC to the Pac-12.
Well, all of them, WAC to Mountain West.
Mountain West, yeah. So there was a stop in between there, too. And so, like, he's been a very likable figure, and now he's at Michigan. Now it's like, oh, like, we got to root against him now. But it's interesting that you bring that up. We'll get to a few more of Isaiah's wishes. He also just walked us into a really interesting topic, because one of the worst holidays of the year, depending on who you ask, is tomorrow. And Isaiah just perfectly transitioned us into that discussion, and we'll discuss it next. It also applies to Browns fans, so you guys listen up. That's coming up next, Fan Sports on and the Fan.
Big Voice Guy here to remind you that you're listening to The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Okay, thanks. I have three more seconds. Bye-bye.
Everybody knows that Roosters is a fun, casual joint with their...
Serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor. Now, my fingers are my eyes. I'm Michael Naranjo. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that is worth doing. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. I know it can do a lot of good. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
My mom is a veteran, and she was injured in the line of duty.
I hurt my leg in a training accident when she was only 2 years old.
She had seven different surgeries over the span of 9 years, and there were tons of complications.
I couldn't be the mom my kids needed me to be.
She missed so much.
After my last surgery, I got an infection so bad I thought it was going to kill me.
I told her she couldn't leave me yet. There was still so much she had to see. I hadn't even graduated.
I'm doing much better now. I may have lost my leg, but I've gained so much. I'm an active part of my kids' lives.
She can kick a mean soccer ball.
DAV's been there for me and my family. Through thick and thin, they've had our back.
Every year, DAV helps more than a million veterans like Sandy get the health and disability benefits they've earned so they can achieve victories great and small.
My victory is getting my life back. I got my joy back.
We got our mom back. thanks to DAV.
Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
What would it take for my child to only miss half a day of school for treatment?
What would it take to fund a cure for childhood cancer?
It would take all of us to come together to support the research. Join us. Go to childrenscancer.org today.
It's 13-year NFL veteran and Super Bowl champion Jason McCourty here, and I'm an innovation ambassador at FAIR, Food Allergy and Research Education. I would say the most challenging thing as a parent of a kid who has a food allergy is probably the ignorance that I myself had in the beginning. I didn't know what anaphylactic shock was. I didn't know the dangers, let alone the things that she needed to be able to have a normal life. When you go to drop your kid off, and every single time in the beginning, we'd have to go through everything she was allergic to. Preparation is everything. And me, for playing football for 13 years, it was all throughout the course of the week. It's getting ready for game day. When you're on the field, you're playing for your fans. At home, you're playing for your family. My playbook: read labels, keep it allergy friendly, and have an epinephrine nasal spray as a backup plan. Because when my family's safe from food allergens, that's the real victory. Visit foodallergy.org to learn more.
When it comes to a gun suicide attempt, all it takes is a moment.
Heather and I had an argument just like any other couple. I was lost. I had snapped. I had a gun and I was going to take my own life. Heather helped me realize that there was still a life to live for the better of myself, my family. My weapon is now safely put away.
A moment of crisis can happen to anyone. Store your guns locked, unloaded, and away from ammo. Hear more safe stories at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
What's the best way to make sure you don't miss any of your favorite fan shows?
Oh, no.
Download the Fan app, silly.
Ah, damn it, I knew that.
App Store, Google Play, or just scream right at your phone. Psst, you can also listen to Buckeye Games. Do it now.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant.
Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable.
The Fan.
Sports talk, weekend style. You're listening to Fan Sports Sunday.
Yeah. Colbert Seamus, Austin Ward, Zeke J. Does your girlfriend understand football? Like, if she's watching, like, does she kind of know what she's watching?
She knows the basics, first downs, touchdowns.
The important stuff. Yeah, she doesn't need to know, like, illegal contact or, like, anything like that, but...
Not that anyone could ever fully understand illegal contact.
She knows, like, a little bit less than I do, just barely.
Because Austin's got an 8-year-old daughter, and he's trying to, like, explain to her football, and she's not, like... And he's realizing that as she's asking questions, he's like, how do I explain this sport just without just saying, hey, just watch it, and you'll figure it out.
It's that old adage of, like, if aliens came down tomorrow, could you explain to them the way that this game works? And, like, Liberty loves football Saturdays. You know, she went to the national championship. Allie and her, you know, they went and then got to sit in the stands. Cole can cover up his ears as they beat Notre Dame in the championship game a year ago. But she wants to watch it. She wants to be part of it. But understanding what you see and, like, getting deep in the weeds, football is so different and challenging than any other sport. And, you know, I think that, you know, you turn on a soccer game or hockey, it's like, well, the puck went in the net or the ball went in the net, and that's the score, and that's it. Now, I know that the games themselves are way more complicated, and understanding all the rules and intricacies and strategy, you can take that as far as you want. But, like, the basics of understanding score and situation and how to win, it's like football is as tough as it gets. That's what I have found, amongst the million other things, to be an incredibly challenging thing about, you know, raising a child. But at least she's invested in the process.
Just wait till she gets old enough, and then for some reason Ohio State's driving down the field and they fumble through the end zone offense, and you have to explain to her why it's the other team's ball.
That's a touchback. I thought that was on punts. Well, it's also on regular plays too. Why'd they call roughing the passer when he just sacked the quarterback? Because he kind of, like, landed on him too hard. Wait, what? I thought you could just tackle guys.
No, he hit him too low. Oh, yeah. It was below the knees. I don't know. Yeah.
No, then you got to go, hey, look, one time in, like, 2009, Tom Brady blew out his ACL in week 1 and the NFL didn't like it, so now you can't dive at guys' knees. Okay, well, let's tackle him high then. Well, you can't do that too, because one time Aaron Rodgers got his collarbone broken by Anthony Barr in a Packers-Vikings game, and the NFL didn't really like it that they were missing one of their star quarterbacks for the whole year, so you can't really tackle him high either. Okay, so then did they protect quarterbacks after that? Yeah, but then it also kind of hurt the Packers because the guy who kept getting roughing the passers was Clay Matthews anyway. And so they were trying to protect the Packers quarterback, and by doing so, they just called a bunch of roughing the passers on the Packers the next season anyway. So like, it is kind of just like, what do we, like, how do we explain this? So
it's impossible, and it's always changing too.
You gotta appreciate that she is trying to be interested in it, though.
No, I do. I love it. It's.
Hey, are you getting it? I'm sorry.
No.
Are you getting it from your girlfriend ever of like, hey, like we watch a lot of sports. Could we like flip over to something else?
Do I? Yeah, a little bit. Right now, a little.
I mean, she didn't watch the championship, yeah. The Cotton Bowl, so we know that.
Oh, she's not locked in. She's like, wait, the Buckeyes lost? Sweet, you're free until the whenever. It's like your Saturday nights are free.
Yeah, once the Cavs started, she really got upset. She was like, Tuesday? Since when are two? Yeah, we're doing stuff on Tuesdays?
I think we can. We can take her side here. You need to turn the Cavs off during the regular season. Like, let's cool it on the December NBA.
I like NBA playoff basketball. You cannot get me to get interested in the regular season at this point in time.
Yeah, I try to give that to her every now and then. I'll give her the shows on those nights. I'll just watch the box score on my phone. Ohio State basketball, she doesn't care for that either. She's really upset on their weeknight thing. So,
honestly, here's how you teach somebody the rules. And maybe this isn't a perfect example for football. I know for a fact that somebody can pick up on rules and strategy in a sport, namely hockey and soccer, from playing the video
games. Absolutely right.
That's how you do it. Now, I don't know if it's a daughter, not a son, so I don't know the likelihood of whether or not she's playing video games a little bit different. If it were a son, the likelihood would probably be really high. But I definitely learned, because like, dude, before I was playing the NHL video games, I didn't know anything about hockey, of like why people are skating here, or
why are they changing lines.
Yeah, it's like
I turned off the fatigue factor on my game.
Yeah, exactly. I turn on all the sliders, and so I don't actually understand what real hockey is like, because in my world, when I'm playing my brother, he doesn't like it when his best players get subbed out. And so in basketball too, it's only his starting five playing, because he doesn't want his subs to come in to take LeBron off the court or something like that. So, yeah, I guess you can kind of distort their perspective, too. But playing the video games is a good way to learn a sport.
Yeah, no, we need to get her into that. Because it's been a long time since I got to play video games.
Yes.
It's just like, haven't had it.
You tell the wife, it's like, it's for her.
I'm going to play, some games with Lib. And we're going to teach her. We're going to get Madden going here so that she can. Now, I don't know. Do they call a bunch of illegal contact penalties on Madden?
Exactly. Now, in the previous segment, Zeke J brought up a great point. Well, I mean, I honestly thought it was a bad point, but it was a good transition into a subject. He said on his 2026 wish list, he wants more college football coaching chaos. At some point, all that stuff's got to hit a breaking point, because you can't have schools literally paying like four coaches, because as Bo Bishop calls it, booster fatigue will set in. Like at some point, it's funny how this all works, because the competition has now shifted back to the classroom, because in order to compete on the football field, you need like wealthy school spirit CEOs of companies to fund that. And yeah. So you kind of need to like groom them in the classroom to then build them into rich, successful people who will then pay back the football team. And so it's like, in a weird way, the competition has shifted back to the classroom, which is what it was supposed to allegedly all be about. But now it's actually there. And so now that we're at this point, the booster fatigue, though, sets in when someone's giving you a bunch of money and they're not seeing all the wins that they want to see. And so what happens there? So I think we will hit a breaking point with that. But one coach who I think is for sure, and we mentioned Kalen DeBoer in the previous segment as well, as being a coach who could possibly be moving around somewhere, because he's probably going to be on thin ice with Alabama fans next year. Marcus Freeman committed to Notre Dame for 2026 in a fashion that looked like somebody who had one final year of eligibility left and was coming back for their fifth year. To say 2026, run it back, is one of the most temporary commitments I have ever seen out of a coach. And so we had Adam Schefter on Rothman and Ice on Wednesday, and was talking about the NFL and what Marcus Freeman could possibly be. And so here is his discussion about some of the flirtations that he's been experiencing with the NFL before he recommitted.
I know Marcus Freeman came out yesterday and kind of put the NFL stuff to bed and kind of labeling it, hey, 2026, let's run it back up here in South Bend. But on your side of things in NFL circles, what's your understanding of how interested maybe a team or teams were in trying to steal him away from Notre Dame right now?
I think he was high on the list of a lot of teams. you know, inevitably there'll be, I don't know, five, six, seven teams that change head coaches, whatever the number comes in over the next week. If I had a handicap, it, I would put the number at about six or seven. We've got two already, but I think he would have been a top candidate in this coaching cycle. But obviously, he's made his intentions clear that he intends to stay at Notre Dame. That's his plan. So if that's the case, it's a moot point anyway. But yeah, he's planning to be there. And I can tell you that wouldn't stop teams from going to make a real run if they really wanted him. But it certainly seems like he's inclined to stay there.
First of all, Adam Schefter broadcasting live from a bag of chips.
The ultimate multitasker.
Yeah, exactly. But
his tweets aren't going to send themselves.
Exactly. So out of all of the, as he put it, six, space, or seven coaching availabilities that are going to be there, obviously Marcus Freeman is not going to be around for this cycle, but as Schefter put it, likely to have been a top candidate for a lot of teams, and I think Diana Russini even put some names on those teams, if I'm not mistaken. Diana Russini was having a fantastic week for her reporting.
Yep.
She's got Giants, Titans, Browns, and Steelers. Keep in mind the Browns and Steelers still have head coaches. We can talk more about that in a second. But Marcus Freeman, just in general, look, we've had a great clock integrity all the way leading up to this point. We're going to butcher this one, but that's okay. We'll get back on track later. But you got to see it the way that I see it. That 2026 commitment, let's run it back. He literally specified, let's run it back, 2026. He didn't say anything about 2027. Not like me when I'm making all my 2026 wishes.
Yeah, you're locked in for
exactly,
the future.
Exactly. I'm talking about 2027 MLB seasons. But Marcus, did that come off to you, if you saw that tweet, off to you as someone who is basically throwing everything all in on this season with a returning quarterback, with a lot of returning talent, first round talent at multiple positions? Did that read to you the same way it read to me?
Yeah, and I'm sure that Marcus didn't mean it that way. I mean, I'm very confident that that's not the read that he was hoping people would take from it. But that's the way that our brains have been wired at this point because of what we see with all of the player re-signings in college football and that everything is basically a year-to-year commitment. I guess I can understand why it wouldn't be that different for someone in his position if he wants to keep his options open. But he is in one of the premier jobs in all of sports. Like being the head coach at Ohio State or Notre Dame, at the level that you're compensated, when you're winning, you get to write those checks forever. I just can't imagine that the short-term opportunity to go turn around an NFL franchise is going to be worth it for him. I don't know why he would leave.
All right, NFL games are about to start. We got the worst holiday of the year coming up tomorrow, and of the six, or seven jobs that are going to be opened up, according to Adam Schefter, which ones are they going to be? We'll discuss all that and more in the final hour of the program, Fan Sports on the Fan. What?
We test marketed naming the show A Guy and His Butlers.
Oh, that is very touching.
But we thought Bishop and Friends had a better ring to it.
Weekday mornings at 9.
The Fan.
Hey, Aaron. What?
Parents who adopted teens to share their journey.
Nathan has taught me to embrace the moment. Age-wise, I mean, I'm in my late 60s. I'm old enough to be his grandfather. Will he be embarrassed to acknowledge me as his dad? I think the most important thing we can do is let them know that they're safe, that they're valued and cared for and loved, and that they're important.
I knew I wanted to be adopted by him because of how he taught me to be the person who I am today. And it's coming from a dad that didn't expect to become a dad. And I feel very proud to be his son.
That was what he needed, and he was what I needed. Every day is full of new opportunities. That's what it's been about, realizing the simple things that it takes to make such a huge difference in these kids' lives.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Isaiah Jacob. On a day where half the NFL is jockeying for playoff position while the other half is bidding for higher draft picks, here's what to watch. The Saints and Atlanta had won for the fate of the NFC South. Atlanta wins, the Panthers go to the playoffs, while a Saints win sends the Buccaneers. The Broncos, Jaguars, and Patriots are still in play for the AFC's one seed, while the Texans need a win and a Jacksonville loss for the AFC South. And then tonight, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and a winner-take-all for the final AFC spot in the playoffs. The Browns travel to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals at 1, where Myles Garrett has the opportunity to break the single-season sack record. Possibly the same day, head coach Kevin Stefanski may be let go. How about NBA action? The Cavs versus Pistons at 2. Jared Allen, Sam Merrill, Dean Wade all listed as game-time decisions. And the Blue Jackets are back on the ice at 3, playing the Penguins. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Go-to destination for Buckeye football talk all year round. This is Fan Sports Sunday.
Mighty admirable of Isaiah Jacob to go ahead and do those live, because Lord knows I wouldn't if I were tasked with updates on a day where I could just replay the 11 at noon and the noon at 1. It'd all be great. But we appreciate your live participation in the show.
I like to pre-tease what you tease just before you do it.
Yeah, thank you. Just so you can, like, steal my thunder, and so I just repeat whatever you say.
I think Zeke really softened it up on Stefanski there. The 12 o'clock live update was, like, definitely going to be the last game. Something changed in the last hour.
I can't be sure what it is, but I don't know. Stefanski hanging around, we can't be sure. Find out in the next update. I might tell you.
Oh, you're sticking around even after?
Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. I think we'll
get an answer tomorrow.
So we mentioned in the previous segment, as Zeke Jay was very excited for more college football coaching chaos, that both Austin and I think that, and I assume Isaiah agrees with this, that Marcus Freeman's going all in on 2026 with the phraseology of that tweet that he had.
Yeah.
And Schefter had told Rothman and Ice, slash me, I guess, in a way, that,
he told you.
I was there. I was listening. I don't know if he was talking to me, but I was listening. I was voyeuring.
I don't know if he was talking to Anthony or Maddie either.
No, he was eating a bag of chips. I know that. Or just crumpling paper into the microphone for fun, one or the other.
But, made for great radio.
Yeah. Diana Rossini said that some of the teams that Adam Schefter told us about were interested in him. Diana Rossini specified that the Giants, Titans, were the two teams who obviously have fired their coaches already, as well as the Browns and the Steelers, who have not, have already had discussions about Marcus Freeman. Now, that's something that could probably be known a little bit earlier, because the rule in the NFL is that you cannot interview, not that Marcus Freeman was interviewed, not that we know,
yeah,
which if he was, we would probably know about it. But in terms of the NFL, when you fire a coach, you can't interview other teams' coaches during the regular season. It can get kind of touch and go in the playoffs, with like which playoff teams are in. And, you know, we've seen it before. There was one video before Robert Saleh became the head coach of the Jets where, like, he's in the background on the phone, but, like, with the 49ers, and he's, like, you know, in all of his gear, and they're doing, like, playoff interviews, and you can see him in the background. Like, is he talking to the Jets right now? Is he going to get the Jets job? But You can hire and interview whoever you want who is not employed by the NFL whenever.
Yeah.
So Marcus Freeman, not being an NFL employee, could have been doing interviews with the Giants or the Titans ever since they fired their head coaches, if you wanted to. And so
certainly was using it for contractual leverage.
Perhaps. That's cool. And I would probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
And so with Marcus Freeman now being linked to the Browns and the Steelers, that's quite interesting. And I honestly thought when Adam Schefter said that he would estimate about 6 or 7.
6 to 8.
With a lot of spaces. Yeah, 6 to 8 with a lot of spaces in between. That there would be that many availabilities. I was kind of thinking that kind of sounds high. And the Browns were an interesting one. Not that it would be entirely unexpected, especially not at this point. Because as the day has gone on, with every minute that goes by, Kevin Stefanski's approval rating on the internet gets lower and lower and lower.
Not from Zeke. He just upgraded it.
No, yeah.
I just changed it in the past 30 minutes.
Parting of ways. And then the Mike Tomlin one is interesting because he's been held on for so long. There is this arrogance, I don't want to say from the Steelers organization because that seems a little unfair, but definitely within my own fan base. Hey, did you know the Steelers have only had 3 head coaches since 1969? Hey, did you know that Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season? Yes and yes, and I'm tired of talking about that. I'd like to talk about playoff victories. Thank you very much.
Been a while since you've got to do that.
Yeah. For perspective, TJ Watt's never won a playoff game. And we're at the point where he's starting to be on the decline with his productivity. Not that he's not a good player, but it's just that point in his career, and it's like, wow, they haven't won a playoff game since then?
Really squandered a lot of defensive talent.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the stat is In the past 14 years, the Steelers have won 3 playoff games, and I believe 2 of them were against A.J. McCarron and Matt Moore. And the third one was against Alex Smith, for whatever you think of Alex Smith as a Chief. But so anyway, nothing particularly impressive. And so that one's interesting with Mike Tomlin. But with Marcus Freeman being the rumored name with a lot of these teams, who would be the 6 to 8 teams? Let's go in the lower bound. Who would be the 6 teams who would possibly have availabilities? We are spotted 2 because we know the Titans have already fired their coach. We know the Giants have already fired their coach. Okay, that's 2. Good. We got to come up with 4 more. Currently sitting in the number 1 spot for the draft would be Pete Carroll. I would have told you no way Pete Carroll's going to be a one and done, but this weekend there's been a little bit of rumors that now it's being expected that Pete Carroll is going to get fired, which would be so on brand for the Raiders, because if you look at the history of them throughout the 2000s, they go through coaches and coordinators like you wouldn't believe. There is zero. They are the anti-Pittsburgh Steelers.
They are.
There is zero stability there. So that shocks me, because I would have expected that Pete Carroll, just being a first-year head coach, would have gotten a little bit of grace. And then we go on to the Jets, who would be in the 4, because the, or I'm sorry, in the 3 spot in the draft. I saw one New York radio guy's, his report was that Aaron Glenn is going to be coming back next year. We were laughing about it in the commercial break. The Jets have not recorded an interception, and we are at the final game of the season. He's a defensive-minded head coach.
Yeah, you'd think if anybody could have produced some of that, it's Aaron Glenn, and no. That's, how many times is that, that can't have happened?
It would have been 1933, according to Twitter. Now, that's assuming that what I read was correct. Sometimes I read things on Twitter and just repeat them. And just because, I can't be wrong if I just say, I saw this on Twitter. Yeah. Doesn't make the fact right, but it makes me correct.
It does. And as long as you're being upfront and citing your source, that's all that you can really do at the end of the day. You got to be accountable for yourself. If somebody else was wrong, they misled you. That's on them. Not getting an interception throughout the duration of an entire NFL season is incomprehensible to me.
I don't know how you don't luck into one.
Exactly.
And I don't think this is also going to be like some overcorrection where next year they're like leading the league, because it's just like, all right, well, hey, you were just so unlucky last year. Now all of Lady Luck is going to be on your side. I don't think it's going to be like that.
I guess giving away your best corner for no reason in the middle of the season probably didn't help.
Well, 2 first-round draft picks. You know, you can do the whole, was it? Which coach was it? Parcells? If I can lose with him, I can lose without him, or
yeah,
something like that. But yeah, they got 2 first round picks for Sauce Gardner. And so that, with the Colts just losing and losing and losing, appear to be decent draft picks now. The next one in line would be at the 5 spot in the draft, would be the Arizona Cardinals. Having a relative on the Cardinals coaching staff. I hope that doesn't happen. However, we are at year 3. The Cardinals had a terrible stretch of, not that they were going to be a good team anyway, because they weren't. However, they did have a terrible terrible streak of injuries, to the point where Denzel Burke was starting the game that I attended a couple weeks ago, and because they're doing all the introductions, and we got Will Johnson and Denzel Burke, so 2 rookies starting at cornerback, and Denzel Burke, who was supposed to be at the beginning of the season like the number 5 corner on the roster, is now thrust into a starting role. They've had offensive issues. Kyler Murray, who I don't really think is that good anyway, but whatever. There are excuses to be made. Whether they are viewed as good ones or not is up to Cardinals ownership, but Jonathan Gannon has a case to plead about how, look, man, I couldn't have been successful this year. Were they going to be successful? I don't think so, but couldn't have been successful because so much went wrong. So, but he's in year 3. So if they weren't super impressed with the first 2 years, maybe we can lock in him as one of them. But that's only, I'm only kind of leaning that direction because I'm kind of struggling to find 5 or 6 others.
Yeah. I mean, I think both coaches down there at Paycor Stadium need to go. I mean, I think Cleveland and Cincinnati both need to move on. Zach Taylor, I think, has long overstayed his welcome. So that's one that's sort of in the middle of the pack.
A Bengals fan, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Even when you guys won the AFC, Bengals fans still didn't like Zach Taylor because he was like flirting with throwing away games that you guys were supposed to be winning comfortably.
Yeah, and then games that he needed to win and should have won when he was helping produce offenses that were scoring 38-plus points, and he loses both of those with... The Al Golden, we don't need to go any further than that conversation, but
I take him back.
100%. I mean, I think that that wasn't the good fit for anybody involved. And Chris Ash didn't prove to be really over the first couple of games as he replaced him, but that's going way down the rabbit hole. But I think, you know, you don't even have to look at necessarily just the top five teams in the draft order, because, you know, you may or may not be able to make cases or that Glenn deserves a second year to, you know, establish his team and his identity and all that stuff. Zach Taylor's had ample opportunity to do so. I think some games he looks like a genius play caller and can organize an offense that is really terrifying. And yes, he'd had to do that for most of this year without Joe Burrow. But as you said, I mean, they've also lost games with Joe Burrow. So maybe give somebody else a turn there. That gives us two more. I think you might have already been counting Cleveland there with Pittsburgh, but
yeah,
that's probably something that needs to happen in Cincinnati. You know, but you're going through the rest of those. Detroit's not going to make a move. Some of these other spots that are out of the playoff, but not necessarily in the top five or six lottery picks. Like Cincinnati's got to be the leading candidate there.
We'll try to hunt for the other ones who are going to get replaced, and we will discuss heavily the Stefanski angle of this. Also, we got a couple AFC North games going on today. One's really important, and then one is happening right now. All right, so we'll talk about that next, which means we have tons of listeners right now, by the way. You know, when the Browns and Bengals are playing a football game, everyone is turning that off to listen to us.
Well, they want
to
hear us talk about the Buckeyes more if they don't want to watch that garbage game.
We'll be right back. Fan Sports on the Fan.
Wake up with the Fan. Eat lunch with the Fan. Go to bed with the Fan. Dream about the Fan. Then change your sheets. Gross.
Ew, you guys are gross, but stick around in case I don't find anyone else.
The Fan.
Hey, Max, you look absolutely dashing in that purple tie. Ready to harness the world?
You bet, Daisy. I'm ready as I'll ever be. And might I say, your purple tie really pops with your vest.
Thanks. I almost went with a cape, but didn't want to come across as pretentious.
Nonsense. Anyone in our line of work should rock a cape.
You might be onto something, Max.
Phew. So, here we go. First day on the job. Got this, right?
Right. Don't forget, we both graduated from Dogs, Inc. with honors.
Which means I can guide my human around a busy city with ease.
And I can give my human a restful night.
I hope my human is kind and loving.
And I hope mine likes wet kisses and zoomies.
Ready to make a difference?
Born ready. Let's go.
Discover how extraordinary dogs like Daisy and Max change lives at no cost to the recipients. Visit dogsinc.org.
You know a thing or two about the moments in life that matter. You've seized those moments to embrace joy, accomplish great things, and build meaningful relationships. Is it time now to sit back and reflect on a life well lived? Maybe. Or maybe there's more to be done. Maybe this is the most important moment you've encountered yet. By volunteering with AmeriCorps Seniors, you can seize the moment, lend a hand, and get back more than you give. We connect you to local volunteer organizations with opportunities that fit your schedule and match your interests. Through AmeriCorps Seniors, you can support people in times of need and make your community stronger. You can become a companion to your older neighbors, brightening their days with friendship. You can even become a mentor for young people, serving as a role model and enriching their lives. Are you ready to seize your moment? Visit AmeriCorps.gov/yourmoment and get started today.
Hey there, Jane Lynch here. You want to hear something funny? Too bad. You want to hear something uplifting that will inspire you? Good. Because today, I want to talk to you about Direct Relief, a humanitarian organization that does seriously good work when it counts. Fires, hurricanes, earthquakes. When disaster strikes, Direct Relief immediately shows up with medicines, medical supplies, and everything doctors and nurses need to save lives. Let's ship her out! Every day across the United States and around the world, they're making an enormous difference. If someone needs help, Direct Relief helps. No politics, no red tape. Hey, what you doing over there?
Oh, I'm packing insulin for kids with diabetes.
See, every box here is literally a lifeline for someone in critical need. So check them out at directrelief.org. You might just bring a smile to someone's face.
You know what hope is? Hope is action. Carving a path forward, even when it's hard.
And kids who still know how to dream. They're the best pathfinders of all.
So at Child Fund, hope means helping millions of children living in poverty worldwide to grow up healthy, educated, skilled, and so all those good things can come true for them. Safe.
And that means safe at home, safe at school, and safe online.
Hope means walking this path together, all of us. Because when we work together, we can do so much more.
That's right. Hope includes you.
Child Fund, because we need each other.
To learn how Child Fund works with children in 23 countries to help them achieve their full potential, visit childfund.org. That's childfund.org.
Yo, I'm your old basketball. Haven't seen you out on the courts in a while. Why not pass me over to Goodwill? Donating me helps Goodwill's mission to provide career training and support services right here in the community. And that's a slam dunk. Donate today. Hey, I got next.
To find your nearest Goodwill locations and to learn more about our mission, please visit goodwill.org. Goodwill, where your things start new lives.
Back in the day, if you wanted to listen to the fan, you turned on the radio, and that was the end of the story.
But now, oh baby, stream us live on the Fan app.
TuneIn app, iHeart app, we're everywhere.
The Fan, Ohio's streaming destination. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a mix of clouds and sunshine here for your Sunday, with temperatures warming up into the lower 30s here for this afternoon. Winds will be fairly light at about 5 miles per hour. And then as we head into the work week, we are tracking a nice warming trend as we get back up into the mid-40s here on Monday with a partly cloudy sky. And that's a look at your 10 weather impact forecast. I'm meteorologist Aaron White here on 97.1 The Fan.
Bobby Carpenter demands that you watch Morning Juice on YouTube. If you don't, Tito will move into your house.
Live at 6 a.m. on YouTube and streaming on The Fan. App.
It's sports conversation, but with a drink and umbrella as a garnish. This is Fan Sports Sunday.
Not this time of year.
Were we supposed to bring in our own drinks?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
With the fruity ones with the umbrellas in it.
I did this.
BYOB.
Did the show one time with Tito, and they had the bumper talking about Bloody Marys. And he said, you know what? I've never had a Bloody Mary.
Neither have I.
You haven't either?
I am borderline alcohol illiterate.
Okay. Well,
so I'm not getting exotic stuff. You know what I do like?
I mean, it's tomato juice and vodka.
You're not missing out.
It's not exotic.
Oh, I don't like I've had Bloody Marys, but I do not like them. I'm not a big tomato guy in general.
And you like bacon?
I like bacon, but...
All right, tell me another drink you get bacon with.
Tomato juice, just I can't get behind it yet.
All right.
Yeah, that ain't me.
You said... No beer, but there were mixed drinks on New Year's Eve at this wonderful party.
Mixed, yes, that I had a great time at once we put the game on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, not a beer guy. Mixed drinks are cool with me, but I don't get, like, super crazy with them. Like, you know what I do want to get? Like, those, but they cost, like, $15 or something. Like, it depends on where you go, and I just get bogged down by, like, wait, that drink is how much? That's not worth it. But like the ones where they put like the rocket bomb pops, like the red, white, and blue like popsicles in them.
Oh yeah,
that one looks knows.
At Pins.
Don't know what they're called.
Okay. Expensive
alcohol litter. Exactly. So I'm not getting that, but I get a little bit jealous every time I see it. I'm like, that looks like it tastes good.
Yeah, it does look tasty. There is something that's cheaper usually at the bar. It's beer.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
I can handle Mick Ultra. IPAs are a hell no. Like the heavy stuff, no way. Dude, Irish Fest, I had Guinness and I literally took three sips and handed it to somebody else.
Whew. They didn't warn me about this when I decided to come in and talk with Cole this morning.
I know. I'm just telling everybody.
But, you know,
I wasn't trying relatable radio host. I'm just saying. I believe in transparency.
And that's great. And you also, I mean, you're not worried about, you've made that decision for yourself. You own it. You're not worried about what other people think. That's important. And I'm not here to judge or shame you. I just want to check back 10 years. No, I'm not. I don't want to do that. Everyone.
Oh, is it like coffee where it's an acquired taste? You don't like it when you're a kid, but
that's how it was for me. Now I got, it didn't take till the 30s before I got fully into the beer scene. It was younger for me, but I think you'll probably, your taste buds also change over time.
Yeah. I like coffee now. I didn't care for it when I was a teenager.
There you go. They say every 7 years, your taste buds change. So I got a different kind of beer I like now than I did 10 years ago. But what Liberty says, coming from school...
What's her favorite beer?
No, she just likes to go to the brewery and hang out with mom and dad. But she would say to order a Mexican lager. That's what she would want me to pass along for you. She's never had one.
Just to be clear,
I want to make sure that that's on the record.
He said any police officers have their radios dialed to a different station than usual.
Turn that off. She would say, don't yuck anybody's yum. So whatever you like,
embrace
it. Be yourself. Like you hadn't had a Bloody Mary. Maybe you'll try one day and you'll love it. Maybe you won't. Maybe the Guinness wasn't for you and you're never going to have another stout, Irish stout down the road. That's fine too. You follow your passion, Cole. Well,
I didn't get into this career to be something I'm not or be somebody else. So I'm coming as I am to this party. And I will tell you my flaws right up front. One of them is I don't like beer, primarily speaking.
You don't have to call it a flaw. That's just
unique.
It is, though.
You're very unique at the radio
station.
You're
special.
At a sports radio station.
I know, where it's like a very guy's guy environment.
I'm sure there's guys that are listening. They're like, I've been waiting for someone not to like beer.
There are at least four cubicles out there with six packs of beer sitting on it right now.
I have a beer on my desk. And, guess why it's on my desk? Because I haven't drank it.
It's funny because the first couple times I saw you on Saturdays, like pre-games for Ohio State games, I'm like, is Cole drinking a garage beer? Because it's always just sitting right there.
No, it was a gift from the Blue Jackets before the season. They gave all of us stuff. They gave the men garage beer and they gave the women are they called Sun Cruisers?
Yeah.
Or or Surfsides, maybe one of those things. It's like either like one is the iced tea version, one is the lemonade version. But
do you drink those?
Yeah, so I said to Nicole Sheeran, I'm like, you want to trade? She's like, no.
Oh, come on.
I know, I was like, and she likes beer, so I'm like, you can take this, I'll take that, and like, we'll actually both drink this, but now it's just decoration, which is fine. It adds some personality to my I fake personality, but somebody else's personality.
Well, shame on the Blue Jackets for assuming.
How dare they?
I mean, come on.
How dare they correctly assume that most men like to drink beer, and it just so happens I'm not one of them.
But they could give you the option, like they were sending out a wedding invitation, chicken or fish, Surfside or garage beer.
They should have pulled us. They should have asked us what we wanted as gifts before they gave it to us. How dare they be thoughtful and try to do it on their own?
Oh. Well, then can I exchange this? I would like a little iced tea, please.
They didn't send a receipt, so like, I gotta just take what I got.
Yeah, I don't think they're gonna let you walk back into the store. I mean, I need to swap out this one singular garage beer, please.
Yeah.
That'd be cool if you could, though.
Exactly. All right. AFC North football going on right now. Bengals 6, Browns 0. Shador Sanders got strip sacked by somebody who we didn't see. Oh, nice Jamar Chase one-handed catch. So maybe it was Shamar Stewart. I don't know.
It wasn't Shamar.
Probably not. But Shador Sanders, who I meant to say, he gets strip sacked. Bengals in scoring position. They score a touchdown rather quickly and then proceed to miss the extra point. So field goal issues, apparently an epidemic in this state.
The state of Ohio just cannot.
Or pandemic, whichever one it is.
Yeah, it's an epidemic, a pandemic. It's all endemic to the struggles for football in the state of Ohio. But Chase Brown with that touchdown, Jamar Chase with a great one-headed catch there. You know, you hate these gimmicky transitions and segues. Ohio State does need a kicker.
Mm-hmm. There's one available.
There's multiple options that are out there in the transfer portal. The state of Illinois might have one that's of interest to Ohio State with a visit perhaps in the works.
So he's an all Big Ten kicker. I do not know honestly, I just know him as the Illinois kicker. So you can make up a name and I'll say, oh yeah, that guy.
I don't know it either. I mean, I know we have a story at Letterman Row that's in the system about potential guys to watch and monitor, and I'm pretty sure that the list said Illinois kicker. That might be his actual name.
Okay,
David Alano is his
name.
Don't
find by me.
I could have said anything.
Zeke right from the top ropes. Like, yeah, that sounds right. I saw that guy kick in October.
Even the wrong name.
Right before Cole snubbed Zeke's girlfriend.
I've wanted him for years.
Exactly. What are the prospects on Rasheem Biles?
Well, my understanding is that Ohio State...
Pit guy, by the way. Pit linebacker. We don't even need names. Just say school and position. Pit linebacker. What we think?
Yeah, so this is the age that we're living in. And we talked, Cole, earlier about Jelani Thurman and his agent and the timing of that portal announcement. My understanding is that Biles representatives are basically inventing a visit out of thin air, that Ohio State does not actually have interest in pursuing the Pitt linebacker.
Oh, really?
No, that is my understanding at this point. Now, maybe that would change, but
that's breaking news.
I don't believe that he is actually visiting Ohio State, or that James Laurinaitis, Mark Pantoni, Matt Patricia, or Ryan Day have legitimate interest in pursuing him. Now, they may go after a veteran linebacker under the assumption that they're going to lose. They know they're losing Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese could be entering the NFL draft, probably will. They could use a veteran linebacker, but I don't think that Biles will be that. And I think that this has happened as well, where his agency is leaking information that ties Ohio State and now also Miami, and neither program is actually in full pursuit of him, which would ostensibly be to raise his asking price for, I don't know, Texas Tech or Oregon or somebody else in the market for a linebacker. But as we sit here right now, I don't think Ohio State is in the market for Biles.
Okay, this is interesting because there's another player I want to ask you about. Also, we'll do the Stefanski angle, and then you guys got to tell me if I'm going to win my bet tonight. I mean, it's not a financial bet. It's a show bet, okay? So we'll discuss that coming up next. All that and more, Fan Sports on Sunday.
There was a man who couldn't stand.
A mom who couldn't wait.
A scientific community that said it couldn't be done.
And then you.
And then I.
And then we.
Brought neuromuscular disease into screaming color with the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
For 75 years, our voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
We've willed the impossible into existence.
We've pushed the science,
raised the funds,
shifted the narrative,
and transformed the reality of life with neuromuscular diseases.
For 75 years, we've built communities together,
established the field of neuromuscular medicine,
and made it thrive.
Call that a legacy.
Call it impact.
Call it momentum. Just call it ours.
Because it's the generations of community heroes that give MDA the strength we have today.
And until neuromuscular disease is a thing of the past, you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Your child is sick. With those four words, the innocence and joy of childhood disappears. But Starlight has taught us four other words that make all the difference. The power of play. Happy kids heal faster. That's why Starlight Children's Foundation delivers happiness through gaming, toy deliveries, and more to hospitals across the country. Learn more at starlight.org.
Matty Ice has a large tattoo on his calf of LeBron eating a lion. I have nothing else to say. Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan. Are you still in your pajamas? We are. You're listening to Fan Sports Sunday.
I'm very glad that we have the Browns-Bengals game on the TV, but are busy and can't listen to it. Because I saw them, the Bengals are on offense, which obviously means that Myles Garrett is on defense. And I saw them spotlight Myles Garrett and kind of like put his name right above him in his stance as if we like just couldn't tell. And he's also the defensive end at the bottom of the screen, not the top. And so like we can see the back of his jersey right now. It's not like other defensive linemen are like blocking his image. We know who he is.
Oh,
and Browns. I can't do play by play because we don't have. But we actually do have the right, so I can do play-by-play. It's just not him. Hey, Myles Garrett, stop trying to celebrate a pick six that hasn't been completed yet and throw a block. Okay, there he goes. So Browns get a pick six. There's a flag. We'll figure that out later.
He was threatened. Myles Garrett was threatening to get in there and get that sack and break the record and forced an errant throw from Joey B. And what an incredible football game we're watching here. Just
the coverage of this has been so maddening because... And I've watched a lot of them. I've watched the San Francisco game. I've watched the Chicago game. The whoever they play, who they play last week, but Pittsburgh probably. Yeah, because Myles Garrett was like
the upset of the century.
Yeah, I think that they were more interested in preventing me from the sack record or whatever. And so, what these broadcasters who like only talk about this all game long and. And Jim Nance getting like really excited when someone gets a sack and like, oh, it was Alex Wright. Hey, the audience fooled me. I heard a lot of cheering and I thought it was Myles Garrett who got the sack. Turns out it was Alex Wright. Like this whole like sack record chase thing, which by the way, sorry, Prophet, it's fake. It's fake now. We're now in the 17th game of the season in week 18. And he's chasing the sack against people who did it in 16 games. I can't even get my numbers right. So this joke isn't even working. But now I can make...
The point is, it's not real.
Exactly.
He didn't do it quick enough.
Thank you.
Not enough games.
I can forever make the argument that he needed the extra game if he does get it. And then he was all butthurt last week because it was a home game. The crowd was rooting for him. And I'm sure there are a decent amount of Browns fans at this game too. Fine, whatever. But... It was, he had a bunch of friends and family there in a suite. He was trying to get it done there. He didn't get it. Too bad. So sad. I'm not worried about it, but I am so glad that I don't have to listen to whichever broadcast. Well, I mean, the show's over in half an hour, so I guess for the second half I will. So if he gets the sack record, I need it to happen before I get home and flip on this game, because I cannot stand another half of football listening to broadcasters talk about one thing and one thing only, especially last week when the Steelers were playing for a playoff clinch and they didn't even care.
I couldn't be sure if the Steelers did either.
Evidently not. Well, our offense is just not that good, and that's kind of all that needs to be said about it. Your defense is really good.
Going on 10 years.
The quarterback ain't great. The offensive line ain't great. But your defense is phenomenal. And they had a great weekend against the Steelers last weekend. I want to ask you about something. So we're talking about Biles.
Yeah.
The Pitt linebacker. And we were talking about how there were all these rumors. And, you know, sometimes, like, the agent stuff is definitely messy with this stuff. And the...
It's getting out of control, man.
Over promotion of players to the point of where, like, myths are starting to be treated as facts. So I did not realize that, and I had heard one of my friends texted in our group chat of like, oh, apparently the Pitt linebacker's not visiting anymore. I just assume that he was looking in a different direction, as you basically just reported for those who didn't hear it. And I had not heard it up to this point. So as far as I'm concerned, it's breaking news that Ohio State didn't actually offer him a visit. They didn't offer him a spot on their roster, and that his agent was kind of just like manufacturing this visit, but it kind of made sense to all the media people because, you know, why research it when it's just, hey, you heard that a player who's from here might be visiting here, as far as people thought that he was a pretty good player for Pitt.
Yeah.
So you assume that that upgrade to Ohio State would make sense geographically as well. And so it turns out they didn't even want him. So now I want to ask you about somebody else who is still in high school, a big-time commit, but now he's kind of in this mess of where's he actually going to play? Miami, who we mentioned with Biles, is they kind of maybe got played the same way.
Yeah.
Because this Biles kid from Pitt also had a, well, you know, maybe not a real visit scheduled, but had some sort of mythical visit scheduled to Miami that fell through. So maybe his agent is just putting together these stories that don't even exist. So I want to ask you about the Georgia defensive end, David Jacobs Jr.
Yeah.
Who I had thought, and I'd been following his recruiting pretty closely because Notre Dame seemed to be in second place behind Georgia. I could have been fine if he went to Georgia. He's from Atlanta. Okay, that's fine. But I'm like, oh my gosh, he's coming to the Midwest and it's not our school, man. That sucks. So I was upset that he didn't go to Notre Dame. But then when he makes the commitment, the video is a little bit awkward because his family is completely emotionless. They're not wearing any Buckeye gear. They're not clapping. They're not celebrating. I mean, they are just like sitting next to him, almost like they don't even know that he's committing to Ohio State. And then stories come out where he's like, yeah, Texas A&M and Miami. I love Ohio State, but I still like them. I'm committed to Ohio State, but I'm definitely still taking my OVs to Miami and A&M. So what's the deal with him? And do you think he's actually ever going to play for Ohio State?
It doesn't seem like it. And that's the risk that you sometimes run when you get into
bidding wars.
Yeah. I hesitate to use that term, but when NIL becomes the primary motivating factor of a recruitment, it is not that Ohio State is unwilling to pay for good players, both to land them and retain them. Now, they don't typically pay as much up front as Miami or Texas A&M, who coincidentally are named in here with David Jacobs Jr. You know, that if it becomes an escalating arms race and a price tag that is out of reach for them. And now this happened with Chris Henry Jr. as well. Once that week heated up and Oregon was getting more involved or staying as involved as they had been, it felt like it was a more of a negotiating ploy and tactic where, you know, you use that to threaten Ohio State. And again, those words are too strong. I shouldn't even put it in that light. But
well, if he was leveraging Oregon against Ohio State and back,
they had,
and didn't Texas join the mix in like the 11th hour?
That seemed like it was also like fabricated by the agency. And I think that's cool. That's the hardest part about dealing with this stuff with the transfer portal and college football recruiting in general right now is like, what is real? because I can't.
The problem is that's your job.
I know. And I have to be able to tell what's real for Ohio State. But Ohio State then has to turn around and figure out what's real for an offer from Texas, what's real from an offer from Texas A&M or Miami, depending on who we're talking about. Chris Henry Jr., if that's Oregon, is Texas actually involved? Ohio State was under the impression that Texas wasn't actually making a bid that would raise the price. So some of this is like agents crafting a narrative that they get to turn around and say to the negotiating table, raise your price for Ohio State, or raise your price if you're Miami. Raise your price if you're a Pitt linebacker. It's because there's not collective bargaining, because there's not transparency with a true salary cap, because there's not airtight contracts the way that, why don't you see this in the NFL or NBA or NHL? It's because of all those things that I mentioned.
All contractual.
So you, until you get to that point, you're just constantly waiting around in the dark through smoke and mirrors in a maze to try and figure out what the truth actually is. So the best that we can ever hope to do is like get a clear read for what Ohio State believes is the reality, which again can be hard for them to figure out because they're dealing with agents and nonsense that's out there constantly. So where does a recruitment like that end? You know, for somebody coming out of Georgia, for having offers that are going to continue to be there at those SEC schools that all you mentioned or Miami, when those specific schools become the primary competition, I just tend to think that they'll probably wind up elsewhere because Ohio State is not going to bid more than it is comfortable on players because there are lots of good players available.
All right. Isaiah is going to tell us in the next segment, since we only have one more left, he's going to tell us if he wants Shador/Stefanski back next year. He's probably going to get 50% of them back, whether he likes it or not. And we're going to make fun of a former Buckeye who I think forgets that he's a former Buckeye. That's coming up next. Fan Sports Sunday on The Fan.
The only workplace in America to participate in the doorknob fart game. And we also play office basketball and sometimes do radio. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
I wish I'd got...
In the world, Children International and friends like you are giving children in poverty a chance to grow and thrive, to be healthy, to succeed in school, and achieve great things. How do we do it? In the best way possible. By helping ensure access to healthcare, nutrition, and educational opportunities. And most importantly, by empowering youths and their families to get out of poverty and into employment through life skills, computer, and job training. The very tools they need to break the cycle of poverty and build futures full of promise. Because every child deserves a chance to realize their full and best potential. Learn more about how Children International is empowering children and families by going to children.org today. That's children.org.
It's been a real journey since 2014 when I first had my injury. I realized that my home was just not working for me and that it was time to ask for help. Homestar Troops is really giving me my life back. The shower allows me to go in and turn around with my chair, pull down storage racks, automated door systems, hours of my morning given back to me. Adaptive sports are a huge part of my life, a huge part of my healing journey as well. Homestar Troops helped with making sure that I had a home gym so that I can continue to train. This past year, I was able to host Thanksgiving in my home. And it was the first time I was able to have my whole family in one place and I was able to contribute to the meal. There are a lot more veterans in need, and Homes for Our Troops is going to be there to help them too.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post 9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
I lost count of how many foster homes I lived in. 20, maybe more. Each time, a new family, a new room, but never a space that felt like mine.
There are more than 100,000 children in foster care waiting to be adopted. The Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption is working to help find them a permanent home.
Now I have my own room and decorated it myself. And just like my family, it's mine to keep.
If you have room in your home or your heart, see how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
Would you show that roughly 20 veterans die by suicide every day in the United States? Canines for Warriors is the leading nonprofit organization providing highly trained service dogs to veterans with PTSD and other invisible wounds of war. Backed by scientific research, Canines for Warriors has transformed the lives of more than 1,000 veterans, helping them reclaim their independence. To find out more, please visit caninesforwarriors.org.
Can't get enough of your favorite fan content? Good news, we're on all the digitals. Follow 971 The Fan on X, Facebook, YouTube, The Talk, and Gram. Your digital home for endless shenanigans. The Fan. Enjoy all the football this weekend, but remember to join us for Reaction Monday.
Sponsored by the Roofing Guys.
The Fan. You're listening to The Fan. It's Sunday. We're a sports station, and we shall call it Fan Sports Sunday.
11 down, 1 to go. Cole Bartemus, Austin Ward, Zeke J on the board. Zeke J is going to throw to, what have we got next? I think Westwood won something.
Yeah, Westwood won, and then we're transitioning into Blue Jackets pregame at 2:30.
That's right. So Jackets Pens today. So it'll be a quick reunion with Yegor Chinnikov, who just got traded, who I saw scored in his last game as the Cleveland.
Imagine that.
Yeah, exactly. Trade a player, and he's already scoring for the other team. So we are trying to figure out if this scoop and score. Well, there you go. Call in the field stands. So for those of you who are driving around, can't see the score live, don't look at your phone and drive. We'll just tell you. The Browns are now up 14-0. I'm sorry, 14-6. It'll help if I give you the right score. So 14-6, the Browns have two defensive touchdowns. Both extra points were kicked from basically midfield because they keep getting celebration penalties for these defensive touchdowns.
They got the same penalty on both defensive touchdowns.
Yeah,
they jumping in backwards to the end zone.
Yeah, doing the Marshawn Lynch, Michael Jackson, hee-hee. Yeah, so for those of you who heard Browns 14, Bengals 6, and got really excited about Shedeur Sanders, I regret to inform you he is 2-for-4 with 22 passing yards, and it's all the Browns defense. Kind of emblematic of their entire season, to be honest with you. All right, Prophet, we got a lot to cover and very little time, so let's get to your portion of it. Stefanski and Shedeur, where are you at with those two?
I'm fine with Stefanski going. It's time for an overhaul. I can respect what he did, but it's time. But the part of it that I don't like is I think Andrew Berry is getting left.
Well, this draft class, though.
It was good. It was good.
Not that that's all that he's ever done, but this draft class looks really, really good.
It looks good, but I can't. They've acted as if the whole time that Stefanski and Berry are one brain trust. And then now at the end, I just can't imagine a world this entire time we've been under these two that they wouldn't go together. They either stay together or go together because they were always on the same page, as they said. And I can't imagine Kevin wanted a four quarterback competition going into this year. And the neglect on the quarterback position, the Deshaun Watson deal, the wide receiver room. I mean, this team isn't built correctly.
And here you just invoked the name.
The Deshaun Watson deal is,
yes,
I mean, that alone is the Andrew Berry's got to go for me.
So, well, here's the interesting thing about it, is because you may have to face that in real time next year because the Browns have actually played themselves and the quarterbacks in college have also played the Browns out of the Browns being able to draft a quarterback because what was supposed to be like, and this is how it goes every single year, this 8 quarterback first round that we were supposed to have somehow turned into 2, and there are 2 quarterbacks who weren't even discussed as the 2. It's not Nussmeier, it's not Klubnik, it's not Arch Manning, it's not Lenoris Sellers, it's none of that. Okay, so we got Fernando Mendoza, and we got Dante Moore. And the Browns currently have the number 4 pick in the draft, and there are 2 teams above them who are quarterback needy teams, so you're getting boxed out. So, you know what you might have? You might have Deshaun Watson versus Shedeur Shedeur Sanders battle for it all, and that is going to make for great radio and terrible football.
I'm hating it.
Yeah, how could Deshaun actually be part of this conversation? Like, what world are we living in?
I'm telling you, it's honestly unbelievable. Yet again, that's why I'm for Berry going as well. And Shedeur, I wanted to give Shedeur a chance. I was fine with him getting the latter half of the season. But for the people that want him to be the number one option next year, it's just, you haven't seen it. I've seen enough Browns quarterbacks that have thrown 7 touchdowns, 10 interceptions with a 57% completion rate to know that, hey, this probably isn't going in the direction we wanted to, let alone he is a 5th-round pick. And the other thing that I hate about it, and I don't cheer for losses, but last week would have been nice to lose, because we've only twice in the past 25 years, we've drafted a quarterback in the top 5. Baker Mayfield, and Tim Couch. And they both are pretty solid. And if you want a good quarterback, typically you're not going to find him in the fifth round.
Solid for a low bar. Just to be clear on those.
That was a Brown standard.
That was a Brown standard. But yet again, if you look at the playoff picture
Couch
right
now. Tim Couch took over an expansion team in a way.
He did. But if you look at the playoff picture right now, the quarterbacks that are leading these teams are all first-round draft picks. They're not typically found in the fifth round.
No. I mean, Dak Prescott would be the first one that I reach for. But, I mean, he's not making the playoffs this year.
Sure isn't.
This year. So, like, they're kind of all over the place in Dallas. But, yeah, no, you're right. So, that's fine. I just want to get your take on that because Shedeur Sanders, by the way, who was already like the most polarizing figure, whether he tries to or not, he just is. He's the most polarizing figure on social media. We know that social media does not like middle ground. They like one end or the other end. And it's almost like in perfect harmony, Shedeur Sanders, his play on the football field reflects his Twitter personality because every throw is either awesome or terrible. And so he feeds the system completely unintentionally, which, I mean, the system is going to like push this sort of nonsense conversation anyway, but his play, like you talk about cherry picking highlights or lowlights to craft an argument. There's no better quarterback.
He gives you
that.
Both.
He's everything. He's everything you could possibly want.
He's yin and yang.
And so we still sit at 14-6 Cleveland. I did not see that coming, but that's what we got right now. Steelers, Ravens tonight. That'll be battle for it all. Whoever's going to take the AFC North and lock up the four seed and probably play Houston, that's how that's going to go. But before we go, I want to take some time, just a couple minutes here before we duck on out of here. We got to make fun of a quarterback who I think actually forgets that he played at Ohio State. Okay. Quinn Ewers, this is the irony of Quinn Ewers putting together a statement at a press conference, because I assume that was asked by a reporter, hey, all this transfer stuff, you experienced this, you know, you've been in this. What do you think? Here's Quinn Ewers on his take on the transfer portal, and get a load of this rich stuff.
I did have opportunities to go other places, but I felt like what I built with my teammates at Texas and the legacy that we built, I didn't want to mess anything up there with the relationships that were built. And to me, it's not about the materialistic things of this world, because it comes and goes. What's important to me is the relationships that are built along the way. And I didn't want to disrupt or rub anybody the wrong way, being selfish and trying to go get money from another team. Because I was a lifelong Longhorn. Growing up, I wanted to play there. Ended up being the quarterback there, living out my dreams. My 10-year-old self wouldn't transfer away and go somewhere else. So at the end of the day, that was the right decision for me. And I think that's important for these younger kids to take into account, is stop being so focused on the materialistic things, whether it's NIL or whatever, and start building relationships that matter, that'll last you a lifetime.
Okay. Ooh. So for those of you who may have forgotten, Quinn Ewers originally committed to Texas, decommitted, flipped his commitment to here, handed the ball off twice to Robert Cope against Michigan State, and then immediately was playing for Texas the next year. So, you know, Austin, your recruiting is kind of your thing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. And by the way, 5640, hey, Isaiah, hit the, even if I'm mid-sentence, hit it. Okay. So it's up to us to be on time. So you cover recruiting pretty closely. There was speculation, as he talks about how this is not about materialism, it's about relationships. Now, if I recall correctly, there was some sort of law that did not allow him to accept NIL money during his high school career in the state of Texas, and so that's why he reclassified
to correct.
Come to Ohio State a year earlier so he can get the money a year earlier. Am I correct
that
in saying that? That
is 100% correct.
Okay.
That was a materialistic thing. And kombucha.
Yes, the kombucha, of course. Lifelong Longhorn.
Nope.
I could find, if I wanted to, I can go on Google Images and find a image of you in a Buckeye uniform on a football field, number 3 with your name on the back of the jersey. So that doesn't make any sense. My 10-year-old self wouldn't transfer. Well, your 10-year-old self would hate you.
Because 17-year-old self signed with Ohio State. Enrolled early at Ohio State.
And the whole Quinn Ewers thing was one of the craziest sagas of, like, just people expecting, like, oh, man. Like, how good does C.J. Stroud have to be this year for Quinn Ewers to not be the day one starter next year? Like, all that kind of crazy stuff. But
he wasn't even ahead of Kyle McCord.
Yeah, no. And so do you hear yourself at all? Like, not about materialism. It's not about the money. You reclassified for money. Lifelong Longhorn. No, you were not. 10-year-old self would not transfer. I heard that and I'm like, we got to play that on the air today.
I'm glad you played that for me because I hadn't heard it.
Especially with you, too, with what you do for a living.
That did not line up with my experiences with Quinn Ewers.
All right. Hey, Jackets and Penguins, that coverage starts at 2:30. Thanks for listening to Fan Sports Sunday on The Fan.
There's nothing Bo Bishop can't do well, except find competent co-hosts. Bishop and Friends.
Weekdays from 9 to noon.
The Fan.